Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 8th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send questions to nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up from where we were before the last meeting we had. We've been off for 2 weeks, and it's good to be back. Let's pick up, let's see, it's going to be in Matthew chapter 21. We're going to be reading verses 28 through 46. Matthew 21, verses 28 through 46. But what think ye? A certain man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, Son, go work today in my vineyard. He answered and said, I will not. But afterwards he repented and went. And he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. And went not. Whither of them twain did the will of his father? They say unto him, the first. Jesus saith unto them, truly I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. For John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and ye believed him not. But the publicans and the harlots believed him, and ye, when ye heard, had seen it, repented not afterward, that ye might believe him. Hear another parable. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard and a winepress in it, and built and hedged it around and about, and digged a winepress in it, and built a tower, and let it out to husbandmen, and went into a far country. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen, that they might receive the fruits of it. And the husbandman took his servants and beat one and killed the other and stoned another. Again he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did them likewise. But last of all he sent unto him his son, saying, they will reverence my son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him and cast him out of the vineyard, and slew him. When the Lord therefore of the vineyard cometh, what will he do to those husbandmen? They say unto him, he will miserably destroy those wicked men, and will let out his vineyards unto other husbandmen, which shall render him the fruits of their seasons. Jesus saith unto them, did ye never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, the same became the head of the corner? This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you, and given to the nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And when the chief priests and the Pharisees had heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. But when they sought to lay hands on him, they feared the multitude, because they took him for a prophet. And it was Matthew chapter 1, verses 28 through 46. Okay, of course, we're still continuing our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. So everybody who hasn't got out there yet should go out to the new website, Power of the County. Sheriff.org. That's power of the county sheriff.org. Become a member out there and make a donation. It's going to cost us about, we estimate about $60,000 to get this project off the ground. As soon as we reach a certain point, depending on how fast or how slow things go, you know, we'll start getting the books out to our sheriffs as soon as we can. Also, here in New York, we decided we're going to go deal with a problem here in New York, which is called the SAFE Act. At this point in time, people are receiving letters in New York telling them that they now need to go register their guns with the state police. And if they don't, I'm not sure exactly what their plan is if they don't. I know they think they're going to take their permits away. Is that right, Gerard? Do you know what they claim the consequences are going to be? But anyway, so we're going to launch we're going to file actually in the federal courts. So we're going to launch an action in the courts. We're going to file this in the federal court, and we're going to sue them for our rights and also for the protection. In other words, we're going to sue the governor here in New York State and the two houses for our rights, and we're also going to sue for protection against the state police by the sheriff. And anyone who joins into this as a plaintiff, we're also going to sue for a monetary payment for suffering. So anybody in New York that's interested in that, you can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, excuse me, highlight the news, and click on New York SAFE Act lawsuit. And that'll pretty much explain what we're doing and what you need to do if you want to join into this action. We're hoping to get a lot of people into this action. But either way, we're planning on going forward with this action probably in about, maybe 2 weeks. We'll probably file the papers. It's going to take a little time to get things together. But as soon as we do, and I'm estimating 2 weeks, as soon as we do, we're going to file. And at that point, we won't be able to add anybody else into the action as a plaintiff. So anybody interested, again, in New York, you need to get out there and get the information and send us your affidavit. Everything is explained on that page. Again, under news on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight news, and click on New York SAFE Act lawsuit. Okay, but more than that, and more than what we're doing, we're in the process of getting ready to do, we'll pull the grand jury together for potential indictment. Anybody who has not been out to review the evidence needs to go out to the website. There's not going to be much time. We're hoping to make an announcement this week of a date, probably next week, but maybe this week. I'm not sure exactly when. But go to go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury, and click on docket. Now, once you click on the docket, you can scroll down towards the bottom right before the video. You'll see it says Grand Jury Criminal Investigation Evidence Reports. We're going to be considering an indictment in LaVoy Finnegan's assassination. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure we're not going to do this until next week because we have people working on this right now to gather together information to really figure out who our targets are going to be. We know quite a few of them already, but we're going to skim through the evidence and make sure we get all the targets, all the people that become part of this crime. So anyway, there is an assassination report that we have out there, and we also have an assassination report from an FBI forensic. It's an FBI forensic report. So we've got quite a bit of information on this particular case. Maybe some people, there's quite a bit of video on this, and also we have a lot of written information. So anyway, people should go out there, take a look at this. If you've seen the videos, you can skip the ones you've seen already, but people should try to go through all of this information, and then we'll be singling individuals out when we make our decision on this. We're planning, depending on how long the first one takes, we're planning on also doing some indictments on the Bundy Ranch, the wildlife preserves, and the Hammonds. We have a list of all of the individuals, or quite a few of the individuals, but I'm sure there are a few that we don't have their names yet. And again, we're going to be researching through this over the rest of this week to see if there's any individuals we missed. And what we'll do when we get together for the potential indictment, we're going to expect people have reviewed through all of this information, first of all. And then we will read off basic charges and a little bit of information concerning what the individual has done or what part they were playing in these roles. And then we'll take a vote one by one until we get through all of these things. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a long meeting once we come together. I'm sure at minimum an hour, but it may take more, longer than that. We're not going to get into discussions. We're just going to go into individuals one by one, read off the charges, explain a little bit about what it is, how they had participated in the crime, and then look for a vote. But again, we're depending on people to go out here and review this information. So, again, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury, click on underneath the grand jury, click on docket, come down towards the bottom of the page, and you'll see this information. Now, on the Bundy Ranch, we have the transcripts of the court hearing, and it's quite long. It's like 4,000 pages. Now, we're not expecting people to read through that. But we are skimming through that and may pull some things out for the case particularly, but we're not expecting everyone else to do that. We'll kind of highlight the points that we found in the transcript. We'll highlight those points when we have a meeting. Anybody who would like to read through this transcript, and maybe it's a PDF copy, so save it to your computer. And then anybody who wants to read through this and highlight in yellow, hopefully you know how to do the highlight with your PDF. It's just got to, you know, highlight the words that you want to highlight in yellow, and then click on the highlighter on top and choose yellow. But anyway, if you do that, get a copy of this to Jan, and he'll get a copy to the rest of us, and that'll be helpful for us to pick out specific points in this trial where the judge particularly has violated the people's rights. But we have a tremendous amount of information, even without going through the transcripts, and we will bring them up at the meeting when we get together as a grand jury. There is also a PDF copy of Bundy Ranch Investigation. I think that's a couple of hundred pages. Some of those pages are the, we got the affidavits, we got quite a few affidavits in there. But we have the habeas corpus that we did, and if you want to read through that, it would be a good education. But it's the same wording, the habeas corpus, as we have here with the Wildlife Preserve, and also we wrote one for the Hammonds. So we had written three habeas corpuses. So they're all the same, so when you come up to them, if you read one, you know, you've read them all. The only thing difference would be the names, and we will be gathering the names of those individuals, and we will list that out as one of the reasons for their indictment is refusing to consider the habeas corpus that we've put forward, speaking very specifically about a right of due process, which none of these people received. So anyway, even though there's a lot of pages in this, again, once you've read one, you've read them all and all of them. So you can kind of pass through that. The habeas corpus is quite long. Then we did a default. We did a ruling. That was quite long. Then we did a default. We did a show cause. And I think we did one other thing. I forget what it was. But anyway, they've ignored the whole process altogether. So, again, we're looking to really consider the indictment in the Lavoie Finnegan assassination, the Bundy Ranch, the Wildlife Preserve, and the Hammonds case. With the Hammonds case, you're going to find that there really wasn't much there, just that we did a habeas corpus for them, and they rejected. We also have some information, which we will talk about, considering the fact that this was double jeopardy for them. These people were put back in jail, and this was double jeopardy. Now, we have also the 9/11 conspiracy, which we want to consider next. Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll look at this. With all that's going on, hopefully everybody's been paying attention to what's been happening. I haven't posted anything up on the news in the past couple of days, but we have been posting a lot of stuff up there this past month. And anybody who hasn't really been keeping up on the news of what's really going on, you're going to want to click on our news tab right up here. Just click on news right on the tab, and you'll go to a page. We've got quite a few videos, a lot of information. I'm sure everybody knows about QAnon. We've got some information on that individual and a lot of the reports that that individual has been doing, and a lot of people have been speaking and talking about. From what we're seeing, and I do think everybody, most people out there that's reporting on this feels pretty confident in this stuff for numerous reasons. And for anybody who hasn't been paying attention, going out there and looking at this stuff, I think you'll probably agree with us. That we've got some real serious information, thousands and thousands of indictments that have been put out across the world. There's been a lot of raids going on, situations at airports. It's suspected that people who are trying to escape justice, trying to flee, not only in the United States but in other countries. Russia had, I think, 5 airports shut down over the past a few weeks. The United States here, we've had numerous, I don't even know what the number is anymore. Disney World was shut down for a while. And all of this seems to be connected to individuals, ultimately, who are trying to escape justice. Mass arrests are being taken place, we're hearing. So the deep state is about to go. And I think I feel pretty confident in this news, and that's why I'm talking about it. Maybe others will speak some more on this subject matter once we get going tonight. But this brings us to our next situation, and that, of course, is when the deep state goes, there's going to be a great void. Now, we did 2 different videos on this, and you can go up to our front page, and right on our front page, we have the first 2 videos is the newest videos we've done. One of them is filling the void that will be left by the deep state. And that's the people. It is now the time to step up. And that's why we feel real strong about going forward with these indictments right now, because we can send these indictments into the court. The court is still receiving these indictments. They are ignoring the judge's orders. We've informed the clerks, look, if you want to get indicted too, fine, you know, but let the judge remove this from the records. Let him be susceptible to 20 years in prison, because that's the penalty for anybody who removes anything from the court record. You remove from the court record anything that's supposed to be filed, the clerk rejects or refuses, as long as it's prima facie, they got to accept it. They cannot make a decision on their own. And if the judge orders them to not file it or to remove it or to send it back, we've suggested to them that they let the judge do that. They should file it. And they have been filing. To date, they have filed all of our papers. They have not sent any paperwork back. We have copied all of our paperwork and everything that's going on to Jeff Sessions, a couple of congressmen, and one senator. We've also been copying the President of the United States. He's been receiving all of our stuff. When we do these indictments, we're going to send it to Jeff Sessions and the President and a few other people in Washington. And when we do all of these indictments, we're going to send that information. We're going to be doing a show cause. I don't know whether we'll be able to work. I think we're going to work on it this week. I'm going to try to get going on it this week, because I think that should go out first. We need to show a cause to the judge, Khan, I believe his name is. No. What's the judge that's in there? Is it Khan? I think it's Khan. Anyway, we're going to file the magistrate. Is that Khan?
No, he's the chief judge.
What's the magistrate's name? Remember?
No.
Neither do I. Okay, anyway, whoever he is, we know who he is. He knows who he is. Maybe he's listening to us tonight. He should be. If I was him, I'd be listening. But we're going to do a show cause to him. And then we're going to demand and command him to obey the law and do his duty. We have already got a default on gun laws here in New York State. And this is on a federal level. Okay, so we've already filed papers on this, and they failed to answer. That they is the governor and also both houses. So we're going to push him. Why didn't he file our default that we filed? We filed a default on this, and he did nothing. Okay, so we're going to push that. We're going to ask him why, what authority he thinks he has that he, you know, can just ignore this. Nevertheless, we still are going to file this court case here in New York within the next 2 weeks. Now, once we file this show cause, hopefully right behind it, we'll have these indictments going through. So this guy really understands we're serious and mean business, because he's the next guy to be indicted. If he doesn't start obeying the law and do his job as the magistrate of the court, then we're going to indict him too. We'll file that paperwork and remove him from the bench and call for another magistrate to be put in his place. And meanwhile, I think the pressure will build up on Sessions. We know that lots and lots of indictments have been, there's no doubt about the indictments. And some of them, I believe, have been executed. A lot of people perceive that people in high power are wearing these boot rings or these rings on their foot so that they can't really escape or run. We've been told that at least 30 congressmen will not be returning to Congress this coming year. So that's interesting. And what's going to take the deep state down is the really the slave market that they have going, the pedophile rings, the slave rings, with people of all ages. And that's what's going to take these people down. And once and that's how we're going to get the people that haven't been paying attention, we're going to capture their attention through that. They're going to go into shock, but the evidence will be so overwhelming, they'll realize and see. At that point, that's when all kinds of stuff is going to be exposed and open, and how they've been working for years to take down America. Anyway, I don't want to get into many of the details. People need to be researching this themselves, thinking on their own on this. Get out to the news, look at some other news. Get out to the news pages that we've posted for YouTube, particularly on our news page. And again, others can bring up some of the details. We don't want to get too involved in this kind of conversation, but generally speaking, we do want to talk about it. But anyway, this is going to open up a vacuum. Something's got to fill the void. And this is where the people step up and get in. This is where the people have to take their authority. And we can't do it without knowledge. If you don't have a proper education, you know, if you don't know the Constitution yourself, how can we take control and give consent properly? If we don't understand what liberty really is, how can we take control and take back our liberty? You know, I'd like to read a few things here. Our founding fathers understood that all just laws come from a just God, and that a nation that claims the blessings of liberty must practice morality, virtue, and pursue a relationship with that just God to keep it. That's an absolute requirement. You know, they have been working all of my life. I remember when I was young, the adults when I was a kid talking about this and, how they were trying to demoralize us ultimately. They removed the word Christ from Christmas. You know, it was almost a sin to say Merry Christmas to someone. And I know right now Trump has made a deal about this. Anyway, when I was a kid, I knew a lot of people, or I knew a lot of Jews as much as Catholics and Christians, and I don't know anybody who was offended by that. But in fact, I knew a lot of Jews who actually celebrated Christmas. They liked, the idea with the Christmas tree stuff. But anyway, in any event, laying that aside, liberty, it costs us. It's not free. You know, if you expect to have your liberties, then you have to be able to be mature enough to allow other people to have their liberties. You may or may not agree with them. And until we come to that point, we'll never have true liberty. If we allow any government legislator, to write any laws to forbid the actions of any of the people, whatever it is they want to do, is providing they don't injure a person, there's no law being broken. You know, if someone wants to stick a needle in their arm, that's their business. Not a wise thing to do, but that's their business. There will be less people dying of overdose. There'll be less children on drugs and getting involved in all of these things and involved in, with the gangs and becoming part of mobsters themselves and so on and so forth if drugs were legal. Because the drug dealers wouldn't be at the schoolyards pushing drugs to begin with. You know, they capture them young. That's the whole plan, is you got to capture them young. You got to capture your victim young, get them hooked on a drug, get them into this and that and the other thing, get the stepping stone drugs into them, and then they got a client for life. That's the whole process. And a lot of the violence in the streets is caused by drug dealers. They're warring against each other, warring against the cops, and warring against the people ultimately, you know. And people are getting caught in the crossfire. But we have to be mature enough to understand that. And we have to be mature enough to accept the people who want to do these things. You know, we could try to talk people out of this stuff, but look, they're responsible for their own behavior. And by the way, you know, let's take marijuana, for instance, hemp. You know, hemp has a lot of qualities in it for many, many purposes. And, of course, medical use is one of those purposes. And so why would people want to prevent that from being used? And, you know, hemp in itself, generally speaking, I don't know if it's addictive or anything. But in any event, if people want to use it for recreational purposes occasionally, you know, you might like to drink a little wine or have a little whiskey or a few beers or whatever, but they can't have their hemp. I mean, if that's what they want, that's none of our business. Again, you know, it's a crime to corrupt the morals of a minor. It used to be a crime when I was a kid. You go to jail for that. You know, you give someone something like alcohol or you abuse that child in a fashion or you corrupt them. When I was a kid, like I said, you would go to jail for that. Today, I haven't heard about corrupting the morals of a minor. But just because people are able to do what they want, they can't injure someone. They can't corrupt our children. If they do, that's a crime, and they'll have to pay the toll for that. That they would have to then go to court and go to a common law court, and the people will decide what is to be done. But again, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they have to have knowledge. If they expect that they're going to have their liberties and they can't have theirs, well, then we're never going to have it. So we have to stop it. We have to, you know, get mature over this. But let me read some of these things here. This was in the Northwest Ordinances of 1787. Which was established a government for the Northwest Territory and outlined the process for admitting a new state to the Union and guaranteed that newly created states would be equal to the original 13 states, and also stated that religion, morality, and knowledge, being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and means of education shall be forever encouraged. So from the very beginning, it was understood. George Washington said, "Virtue or morality is a necessity to spring a necessary spring of popular government." Patrick Henry said, "Virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, my friend, and this alone that renders us invincible. These are the tactics we should study. If we lose these, we are conquered, fallen indeed. So long as our manner and principles remain sound, there is no danger." John Adams said, statesmen, my dear sir, may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion and morality alone which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue. And if this cannot be inspired into the people in a greater measure than they have it now, they may change their rulers and forms of government, but they will not obtain a lasting liberty. Again, John Adams said, "It is religion and morality alone which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue." Daniel Webster, "Lastly, our ancestors established their system of government on morality and religion, religious sentiment. Moral habits, they believed, cannot safely be on any other foundation than religious principles, nor any government be secure which is not supported by moral habits." Noah Webster said, "In selecting men for office, let principle be your guide. Regard not the particular sect or denomination of the candidate. Look at his character. It is alleged by men of loose principle or defective views of the subject that religion and morality are not necessary or important qualifications for political stations. But the scriptures teach us a different doctrine. They direct that the rulers should be men who rule in the fear of God, men of truth, hating covetousness. It is to the neglect of this rule that we must ascribe the multiplied frauds, breaches of trust, speculations, and embezzlements of public property, which astonishes even ourselves, which tarnishes the character of our country, and which disgraces our government. When a citizen gives his vote to a man of known immorality, he abuses his civic responsibility. He not only sacrifices his own responsibility, he sacrifices not only his own interest, but that of his neighbor. He betrays the interest of his country." Now, common law courts is the place where the sovereign sojourns, and that means where the law of the king rests. And that's what we are trying to do, is bring the law of the king back into the courts, which is the common law, which what this country was built upon. Patrick Henry said, "It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religion, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. For this very reason, peoples of other faiths have been afforded asylum, prosperity, and freedom of worship here." 2 Corinthians 3, and I heard the president bring this one up, I think about a week ago he brought this up in a speech. And this is 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 17. "Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." Dwight Eisenhower said, "We have never stopped sin by passing law." You see, we can't have our behavior legislated. You are responsible for your own behavior, and that is liberty. And if you don't allow people to be responsible for their own behavior, then we will never have liberty. We will have what we have today, a statutory prison that we all suffer in. Anyway, Dwight Eisenhower said, we have never stopped sin by passing law. And in the same way, we are not going to take a great moral ideal and achieve it merely by law. You're not going to be able to legislate sin away. This is where proper education and morality and moral compass plays its role. As Thomas Jefferson said, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." So liberty demands that we do not permit the state to legislate our behavior. This is the battle we must win in the courts, and this is the battle we're fighting. And we're writing a book on this, and hopefully we'll get it out. We'll get it out piece by piece, and sometimes a little bit of it does come out, what we're doing. But really, what is liberty? Your liberty may not be someone else's liberty, and you may not approve of that other person's liberty. But you know what? It's none of your business. It's none of the government's business. If I want to smoke hemp, it's nobody's business but my own. If I want to put a needle in my arm, it's nobody's business but my own. And I'm using the worst cases because this is what we got to get over. Right now, there's this big frenzy in going on in Washington, even with between Trump and Sessions, about drugs. Hey, wait a second, it's none of their business. And at least at that point, they're in error. Thankfully, it seems that Trump's got a pretty good grip on our Constitution and on our founding fathers and on history. He speaks of history often. If you listen to his speeches, he just was down in Tennessee, and was it Tennessee? No, where was it? Maybe it was Tennessee. I forget where it was, but he brought us some history. Anyway, look it. In order for us to have liberty, we must give the other guy next to us his or her liberty. And we need to go into the courts and fight this battle. We were going into the courts to fight, like I said, here in New York, we're going to be fighting the gun issue. We may also do something on a it's on a federal level anyway. But we may do another case on the gun issue also. We also need to go up against the judicial system themselves, the judiciary. We have to sue the judiciary because they have been making all of these horrible, terrible decisions under civil law and not under common law. They have brought statutes, and they've been taught this way. You know, lawyers have been taught statutes. They have not been taught the Constitution. Judges are lawyers, you know, that became judges. And they continue to rule on statutes. Everything has a law and a rule. Well, that's not how common law works. And it's difficult for them to get their head around this. But, you know, the judges up on the federal level, even the evil ones, know the truth. And they know what the real law is. And they've been hiding it and preventing people from having it. Because people go to lawyers to get represented. And they don't know that they're being really losing their liberty. They are not representing these people properly, nor can they, as a matter of fact. I mean, they can push so far. If you get a good lawyer, you know, we have Brent Winters with us, who's a lawyer, and he's a common law lawyer, and he knows he can only push the court so far because they'll take him and they'll taser him like they did out west. They'll taser him in the courtroom if they have to. They'll put him in jail if he doesn't comply. The judge will take him in the back room, tell him, don't talk about this no more. This is over. Don't bring it up. And if he goes back out and brings it up, he'll find him in contempt and put him in jail. But you see, they can't do that to us. And that's why we're in a better position to take this into the courts, because we're not lawyers. We're not playing ball with them. We want nothing to do with their statutes, and we let them know right off the bat. As soon as we get started, we let them know, your statutes is not what we're in here for. We're in here for justice, and justice will only be found and met in common law. And we will be very clearly right up front in the very beginning, you know, we've written so many papers, and we've been in so many different cases that we know exactly what they're going to say before they even say it. This case, we're going to write, and we're going to make the argument before they can even make it themselves. And then we're going to make the argument that they cannot argue, they cannot defend against, they won't be able to answer. So we will make these points up front, but we will make it absolutely crystal clear with the magistrate, who may think he's a judge, that there's no such thing as summary judgment in our court. You get to decide nothing. You cannot make a decision to decide to throw this case out for this or that or the other thing. We know exactly there's two or three reasons they usually throw cases at. We're going to cover that right up front. We're going to make it clear that if they even attempt to do so, we not only will give them a writ of error, remove them from the bench, we'll also file charges against them for fraud on the court. You know, only an officer of the court can commit fraud on the court. And when a judge comes out, And the law is clear, and everything is clear, and he rules the opposite way, guess what? He just committed fraud on the court. And that's the charge we will put upon them. And we will indict that individual also on the same charges immediately, as quick as possible. Of course, we've got to get the people together and ask for that indictment, and the people have to agree with us. You know, we can't say we're going to get one, but I'm pretty sure we probably will. And that's what we need to do. So we really need, it's time to learn, it's time to educate ourselves. You know, we have some people, quite a few people, that have gone through the course. But we have a lot of people who've started the courses and never finished it. It's time to get back. We have some members who have never attempted the course. You know, we have 1,009 grand jury administrators. And we don't have 1,009 grand jury administrators that are active at this moment. Now, they've gone through their courses, and they prepared for the job that they're going to be taking up. We need about 14,000 people across the nation to take these positions as administrators, which, by the way, is a paid position. Because right now, the courts process everything that goes on as far as when they call the grand jury for indictments or they call a trial jury for a trial. You know, the courts control those people. And they're able to ask them questions and figure out psychologically where they're coming from and what court cases they want this one to hear, or if they don't want this guy to hear any court case, they'll just dismiss him. I mean, they ask all kinds of questions. They ask you what kind of TV programs you watch, what news stations you listen to, if you're politically active, if you're a libertarian. All these questions, none of their business. You know, there's certain questions the jury must be asked, but they're minimum, far and in between, and they certainly are not personal questions. But that's what they do. So that's called, you know, a puppet jury. That's a stacked jury, you know. When the government comes out against you and the prosecutor is against you and the judge is going to do the will of the prosecutor, they're already working this out because they're looking to get prosecutions, okay? But by the way, by sending people to jail, there's money to be made there. If people don't understand that, it's a regular business, okay? A lot of jails are being privatized. I say shut them down or fill them up with judges. But anyway, and prosecutors. But anyway, so you have a judge against you. You've got a prosecutor against you. And now you got the grand jury who's already against you. They already, you know, indicted you. And now you have a trial jury that is totally blemished. It's a puppet jury. It's a stacked jury. They're going to get their statutory conviction against you no matter what you do. They're going to get it. Because after all, in all likelihood, you did break the statute, which is no law at all. And so you're all alone in the court, and everybody's against you. The chances of getting through this is very, very slim, you know? I mean, some people do work through this. Sometimes the jury does see through all this, and they recognize the con job that's taken place, and they let you go. But that's not the story usually. Usually the conviction takes place, and you go to jail. Or they'll scare you. They'll bribe you. You know, look at you're going to get 30 years. You're definitely going to jail for 30 years. Plead on this 4 or 5 years, and we'll make this deal with you. I mean, they scare the hell out of people. Who are these people? You know? But that's what's going on. And these people, in most cases, haven't even broken the law. I'm trying to think of the judge. Judge Bork said this, and I believe it was 80%. He said 80% of the people that are in jail today are there because they opened their mouth. And what he means by that is they argued against the charges or the statutory level and accepted the process. You know, once you hire a lawyer, you're accepting the process. This is not the American process. And there is no such thing as a criminal court. The only thing is a court of record. You know, that's all there is as far as any criminal kind of a court takes place. And they have the penal law. What the heck is the penal law? That's all statutes. That's nothing to do with we the people. We never gave the Congress the authority to write any kind of statutes to control our behavior. Nowhere. Look up Article 1. Read through it very clearly. Section 8, Section 9. Read through it. And you will find there's nowhere where we gave them the power or the authority to rule over we the people, because that's what they're doing. We ruled over them. You know, when we, in the preamble of the Constitution, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. We're above the Constitution. They're below the Constitution. Their authority is only that which we gave to them, as far as the legislators are concerned, as far as they can legislate. And the judges, they don't have the power or the authority to rule off of their little thrones that they think they sit on, and you walk in and they claim it's my court. This is how we were going to run my court. You know, you don't say this or do this in my court. No, it's not his court. It's the people's court. It's the court of God. It's the court of record. It's where the king sojourns, where the law rests. That's what the court is. And the judge doesn't get the chance to say anything. It's the people. Look, we're supposed to have government by consent. And that means you can't go to court unless the people decide that you did something wrong. Not breaking statutes, that you injured somebody, that you committed a crime. And then the people decide whether you're innocent or guilty, not the judge. And the people decide what is law and what is not law, not the judge. We have the power and the authority to nullify. We can say no. And the people can do that in many places. They could do that as a grand jurist. They could do that as a trial jurist. They could do that as the committeeman. They could take back these people out of office. They could recall them through the committeeman process. People don't even know that. Anybody in office we can remove in 90 days if the people actually control the committeeman process. Anybody in office we can remove quite quickly just by indicting them. We would give them warning. You're breaking the law. Stop acting like that. Do the right thing. Fix the situation that you just made. If they refuse to do that, then we bring them for consideration of indictment. They get indictment. They're removed from office. The people have the power and the authority in the political and also in the judicial. And that's where the power of the people is. The law must be enforced by our sheriffs. If our sheriffs understood the law, we wouldn't have all these people in prison. Now, let's get back to what Bork said. Bork said 80% of the people in prison because they opened their mouth. Most of them, I'd say at least 80% of them, 80% of the 80%, at bare minimum, I think, in my opinion, from what I've seen, are in jail because a judge put them in there. We have a judge not too far from us here in the Hudson Valley who was making the claim that in his career he was retiring and he had issued out over 1 million years sentences to people and proud of it, boasting of it. That's sickening. It's disgusting. Who was he? Who made him judge over anyone? Constitution says that we need to get a trial by jury, and it's in a court of law, which is a common law process where the king's court is the law in the court. And nobody can look at people going to town courts all day long. They go into city courts all day long. They go into village courts all day long, in and out. They're there without indictment. They're sentenced with fines or imprisonment or both, without being indicted, and without a jury of their peers. 20% of the 80%, let's say, they put a six-man jury there, which is not proper to begin with. But again, they're tainted. And it's a statutory problem. You're going to jail for breaking statutes, which is no law at all. That's the thing that people need to get their head around. Statutes are not law unless we've given them the authority. And we have never given legislators any authority to have any power or write any law that governs my behavior. That's my business between God and myself. And it's your business between you and your God. Has nothing to do with the government. Get an injured party, that's a whole different story, and that's where the law comes in. But again, until people can become mature enough, educated enough to understand this, and take a stand on this, and that's what we National Liberty Alliance is all about. We only need about 20 to 30,000 at the most, maybe even less, 20,000, 15,000, at the most people, okay, across the nation to come into the process, understand what liberty is, understand what law is, understand what a statute is and what statute is law, because some statutes are law. Again, read Article 1, Section 8. You'll find out what statutes we have given these people the authority to create. So we have lawful statutes. Much of U.S. 42, well, I couldn't say much of U.S. 42, but we have a lot of codes in U.S. 42 and U.S. 18 that are very beneficial to us because it lays out things like government acting under the color of law, and they do this thing or that thing, conspiracy, so on and so forth, and it's so many years in jail. And we use those statutes because those are lawful statutes. Nothing wrong with a lawful statute. We could use it. But again, we need to take back the courts, And when we bring, when we go after the judiciary, we need to do a lawsuit directly outside of what we're doing. We need to do another lawsuit directly on the judiciary alone. And we need to get the people as a trial jury to sit in and rule on this, because this is the people's business. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people, will sit in that courtroom and decide innocence or guilt on that judiciary. And I'm confident we will show the people that they are guilty and that they're ruling on statutes that is no law, and that they're being controlled by the quote-unquote powers that be. They keep the status quo, and they deny your unalienable rights day after day. But we need to sue directly the judiciary on this level. And so hopefully we'll be able to collect enough donations over the next few weeks to be able to do all these things. And if we don't do them, it's only because we can't collect enough money. So we do need money. Anybody that can give, you know, give to this cause. And again, you know, we have the Constitutional Sheriff project that we're working on, which is an education for them. If we don't have a sheriff that understands the law, what worth is he? What worth is any sheriff who raises his hand, swears to obey and protect and serve and so on, the Constitution, and doesn't even understand what the Second Amendment really means? What good is that? What good is an elected sheriff if he doesn't understand the law? I get this all the time from sheriffs. They're confused. They have no clue. They have no backbone. They don't know who their authority is. They think they have to listen to the judge. Oh, we have to go beg the prosecutor for a prosecution. No, let you, sheriff, get up there, get 25 people together, take control of a courtroom, ask the people for an indictment, bring the papers down to the clerk, file it, and demand that a case be taken place. That simple, because that's the way it works. But the sheriff doesn't know that. Sheriff does not have to go beg a prosecutor or anybody for an indictment. A coroner does not have to beg a prosecutor for an indictment in a murder case. He doesn't have to do it. It's his duty to take it directly to the jury. Bypass the prosecutor. The prosecutor is there to prosecute what the people say he needs to prosecute. Now, it is true that the prosecutor can call for a grand jury. That's why there is written statutes on how a prosecutor calls for the grand jury. And everybody thinks that that's the only way you can call for a grand jury. No, we the people can call a grand jury. That's what we're doing right here. We're calling the grand jury. The first grand jury ever that's on record that we're aware of is the Magna Carta. And the people came together, and the people decided, and the people grabbed the king, and the people forced the king to be obedient to the law or off with his head. And he decided to keep his head. So people don't know these things, and we're ignorant to these things. And if we're ignorant to our past, we're going to repeat all the negatives in our past. We need to have an education. We have lots of plans. You know, we ought to have a plan to educate the people as best we can right here through this website and gathering people together to come into the courts to take control. Then we want to educate the people through the committeeman process. We will have the opportunity to educate everyone in every election district as we start to move back into the political process, the political side of things, without the politics. We also have a plan to educate the sheriffs. But again, that costs money. We need to get the books out, handbooks into the sheriffs. I believe, and anybody that everybody should go out and read the handbook we wrote. It's a PDF copy. And if you think that that's not powerful enough to change the mind and heart of any decent-minded sheriff, so all we need is a decent-minded sheriff. There's no doubt in my mind, no doubt in my heart, that sheriff will understand and see the law and start executing it the way it should be. But that's the job of the people to get this message out. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's what everybody needs to be involved with. If you're not involved in a committee somewhere, at least an hour a week, that's all we're asking for. If you can put in more, of course, we want more, but minimum, an hour a week. If you can't do that, then maybe the nation isn't that important to you. Maybe America isn't that important to you. You know, if you can't give $5 a month, that's $60 a year. Just think about that. That's giving up one coffee and one, I don't know, bagel. A coffee and a bagel. Once a month, just give that up. and give that $5 to the scores. If you can't do $5 a week, I mean $5 a month, which is $60 a year, I can only say shame on you then. I don't know what else to say. Then America isn't that important. You know, we have a huge, huge membership, and yet we're still suffering for money. Why are we suffering for money? We broke through 6,000 members. We're about 6,500 members right now. We're pushing on to the next number, would be 7,000. And if everybody gave $5 a month, just think of what that's $35,000. Is that right? Yeah, that's $35,000 a month. What we could do with $35,000, we can have so many court cases going on. We could have the Sheriff's Project would be done. Okay, National Liberty Alliance would have no more growing pains. We'd actually even hire some people so that we can have people who are working full time to get certain work done that needs to be done. I mean, we could become such an efficient, powerful machine for the people. Again, it's all about the grassroots. But the people have to do the job. The people got to step up. The people got to fill the vacuum. The people got to take these positions. The people need to become the administrators of the court within their county. We need four administrators in every single county in America. And in large counties like New York City, the five boroughs down there, we might need 8 or 12. But generally speaking, four is the minimum across the nation. We got 3,000 counties. That's about 12,000 individuals. We need them. Each county needs about 200 committeemen. And believe me, there are a lot of committeemen out there right now dying to be free, frustrated and disgusted with the system. And if educated people go in there and take the power and the authority by becoming an elected committeeman, because mark my words, there are no elected committeemen across the nation. I have not found one. We've looked into lots of states. The first state, of course, was New York. We were blown away. Not one elected committeeman in the entire New York state, not one, until we got involved. And so all you need is one elected committeeman in every county who will take control of the committeeman process, who has the right things in their heart to bring the power and authority back to the people, back to the committeeman, with an equal playing field, and then we'll start to get statesmen into office. Then we'll start to require knowledge of the Constitution before you even come talk to us, so that we would support your name on a ticket. Because people do not get into office without the people. In the smaller office, they may be able to get away with it. You know, they're going to go out, maybe get 200-300 signatures. But I'll tell you what, these people are so lazy anyway, they won't even go out and get their 200-300 signatures. Only the liberty-minded person who has his heart in the right place, and he can't get the any party to support him, will go out and get 1,500 signatures all on his own, with maybe 3 or 4 or 5 people helping him. And that's a lot of work, you know, to get onto the ballot. But we the people need to know, we cannot put anyone on the ballot who has not had a sufficient education, a proper education in the Constitution and in civics. If they don't know about our founding fathers and who they are, and they don't know what common law is, and they don't know what a court of record is, and they don't know what our Constitution says, and they don't know the limitations of government, whether it be in the administration, the judicial, or the legislative, if they don't know those limitations, and they don't know the obedience that they have to that Constitution and what it says and what it means and what it means to them for their power and authority to control them, then they shouldn't be in office. But our political offices are filled with ignorant people who have no knowledge, no understandings, no concern. Their hearts are dark to begin with. They're immoral in most cases. We're going to find that out real soon, because the swamp is being drained, and we're going to see all these monsters come up. So, if people don't step up to do this, well, then we deserve the government we're going to end up with. You know, Trump is doing a great job, and he's delivering back a potential government back to us by draining the swamp and getting rid of all these monsters. And if the people don't step up to fill that void, woe is us. All right, anyway, I think I've preached enough. Let's move to our announcements. Any announcements, Jen?
Yes, I have... mainly questions rather than announcements, if you want to go with questions.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. The first question neither of us could remember was, who is the magistrate in the Northern District, Federal District Court in New York? And that's Daniel Stewart. He's the man.
Okay, Stewart. So that's the guy we're going to be going after with, hopefully, this week.
Yep.
One of the things I want to do this week is get that paper done and get a show cause to that guy and start moving towards an indictment. So his name is Daniel Stewart?
Daniel Stewart. He's the
man. Daniel, did you get that?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Hope you're listening.
Right. Oh, he's listening. So, probably one of his clerks, maybe.
Yep. Okay, next then. I've been getting some questions on our new filings against the New York State Pistol Law or the SAFE Act. John sent out an email announcement this week to all New York State NLA members announcing the filing and how they can join in our action in the Federal District Court in the Northern District of New York. Just to reiterate, we'll be suing for the following three things. One, the court is to order the state to stand down and all county sheriffs to protect us from any state police action. Two, we will also move the court for an injunction until the case is settled. And three, for monetary damages of $50,000 for each plaintiff. Now, the questions are, is it okay for NLA members to spread the word about our new filings with the federal court in New York to other people, for instance, non-NLA members who may want to join us? If so, would those people who are non-members be required to join NLA to participate as plaintiffs? It would seem like this would be a good source of new plaintiffs to me.
Right. Yeah, the answer to that is anyone can join us. Nobody needs to become a member of ours, but they should look to see what we're doing because they need an education like anyone. I have met very few people who know the Constitution. It's very rare. And even people who want to get rid of the SAFE Act and this act and that, they have no clue on what the Constitution, what liberty really is. People think liberty is freedom, but liberty is much, much more than freedom. And it requires really morality. And it requires patience. It requires maturity. But look, if someone wants to join the action and not become a member, that's fine. One of the problems they will have by not becoming a member is we have no way to contact them to keep them informed, abreast on what we're doing. Because all we have to do is go click a button here and click on New York. And then we can email everyone in New York and let them know how the case is going, when new papers are filed, when a hearing is going to be, and all that information. It's way too much work, and we don't have the manpower to try to deal with each individual outside of being able to be in the collective. But even if they still don't want to be a member and they want to get in, they can still come in. There's no requirement to be a member. But I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to be a member, because a membership is 100% free. You have the opportunity of two free courses. Everybody should take advantage of that. We have a higher education underneath our education tab. Once you get through the civics course and you get through the constitutional course, now you can move to that higher education if that's what you want. I should hope a lot of people will move to that higher education. But we offer a complete free education, no cost, nothing. Nobody's required to give us a penny. We ask to give $5 a month or more, one cup of coffee and one bagel a month. That's all you got to give up, one cup of coffee and a bagel a month, $60 a year. So if you could do that, fine. But look, there are some people who are very fixed salaries, maybe making very, very minimum money, barely surviving. They can't afford $5 a month. That extra $5 means a lot to them, and we understand that. So we'll always have some people who are really struggling, retired, maybe ill, whatever. And so that's okay. But most people can afford $5. But again, we don't require it. Nothing is required. All access to everything we have, once you're a member, totally free. And, you can leave anytime you want. You can click on the button, remove yourself, and you're out of here.
Hey, if they win the suit, they got 50 grand coming.
That's right.
Right.
You can't turn that down.
So anyway, anybody who's interested in that suit in New York, and we're going to do something on a national level, maybe similar to this, if we can get enough money to get moving on it. I want to get these projects going and get them kind of filed in the next couple of weeks, get all of this stuff done, and then move to the next project. And one of the projects, again, is to go after the judiciary. And there, we may do something similar to this on a national level. But look at it. Anybody wants to get more information on this, go into your nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight news, and click on New York Safe Act lawsuit. Again, highlight the news. Highlight the news. Highlight the news. Come down and click on New York Safe Act lawsuit. And that'll give you all the information you need in order to join the lawsuit. Okay, I think I got that. Didn't I answer all that?
Yep. I covered all that. Okay, in Black's Law Dictionary, the fourth edition, listed under the word when, it says, when the common law and statute law concur, the common law is to be preferred, period. And then it lists 4 CO. 71. What does the 4 CO. 71 refer to?
Well, that I'd have to defer over to Brent if he's here and can unmute himself. Brent, can you answer that? If Brent is here, I'm sure he'll unmute himself and he can answer.
I think I'm unmuted.
We can hear you, Brent. Yep.
Oh, okay. I couldn't understand. Maybe I've got my volume up too loud and muffled what you said.
Yeah, repeat it again, Jan.
Seal?
It says after that quote, it says the number 4, the capital C, small o, period, and then 71.
And that's in Black's Law, 4th edition.
Right.
It's a reference
Well, no, I don't know, but I'm going to, while you're talking or until I'm asked to say something else, I'll see if I can look it up.
Yeah, okay. We'd appreciate that. Okay.
So what was the statement before that?
When the common law and statute law concur, the common law is to be preferred.
Okay.
Well, it always to be preferred in any event, and you know what? One of the things you got to realize when you read through Black's, okay, is that Black's responds and reports on many laws. It's not just the common law, okay? You have a civil law. There's so many different types of things. We did write a paper on this. I'll have to get that out and make sure that gets included in the book. I think it was something like 20 different laws word law isn't right, I'm looking for a different word. Again, there's common law, there's civil law, and civil law is generally statutory. Anything outside of common law is pretty much statutory anyway. Somebody makes the statutes up, okay? That's what makes our nation unique. We are a republic, okay? But our republic is governed by a constitution, and our constitution was ordained and established by we, the people. And that is the difference between our republic and any other republic. Okay, I don't know of any other republic that has a constitution totally created by the people and on behalf of the people and governed by the Bill of Rights. Okay, you have China is a republic, Russia is a republic, but the people didn't make the laws there. Some individuals did, small group of individuals. Look at civil law, statutes, statutory law. Ultimately, that stems from Babylon. And as time went on, Justinian was an individual who came up and kind of rewrote things and, kind of pulled it away from Babylon and it was being accepted. It became Roman law, and today we have this ugly thing in our nation, and it's called statutory law or civil law. I think you might want to refer to it in our country. But we need to get back under common law. Now, the Constitution and the common law must always rule all things, and any statute that has not got the authority to be created, to be legislated, is null and void. And we have to recognize that. Every time we look at a statute, we got to see and go back to see, trace its authority. And if you can't trace it right to the Constitution, it has no authority at all. So any judge that makes a decision on a statute, and you trace that, well, okay, you made the statute, it came from the legislator, we'll trace it from the legislator back to the Constitution, and if you can't do that, that statute's null and void. And that judge must rule properly. Okay, So remember, you know, basically in any kind of a criminal case, it is always the case where you get a trial jury. But when it comes to a civil case, okay, as far as a contract dispute, that kind of thing, okay, you can permit for a judge to make the decision in your case. It depends on how you file it. If you file it as a court of record, then you're saying to the judge, I want a jury. I don't want you to make any decisions in my case. You could be the referee, you know, direct the traffic, keep things flowing. But you make no decisions in my case. I want the people to decide. The Constitution says anything over $20, you have a right to a trial by jury. But if you decide to, you want to get through it quickly and everything, and you let the judge make the decision, usually most cases should be able to be heard in a day. I mean, some cases get complex, but generally speaking, most things are very simple. You know, it's a dispute. You go in, the judge makes a decision, and if he's acting under American jurisprudence, he's really bringing justice into the court, you'll get a good decision. If we can get honest judges in there, and judges that fear the people, fear to be indicted by violating their authority, you know, ruling outside their authority, okay, you get a judge that's going to rule on American jurisprudence, then why not go to a judge? You have an appellate system there, you know. You can go up, you can appeal a couple of times, and get through the process. And if they all agree against you, as long as our system is honest, and it's not honest right now, I wouldn't trust the judge to rule on what I'm going to have for dinner. You know, I just wouldn't even let him rule on anything. I'll give him the rope to be able to think he can rule, and if he rules on my way, the right way, then fine, I'll let it go. But if he doesn't, we'll remove him. We'll give him a writ of error, and we'll see where that goes. And if necessary, we'll remove him from his position and get another judge in there. But, courts of justice, generally, you have the people ruling. But go ahead. Where are we on this question? I don't remember.
Okay. Well, then, next question. And listen carefully. Should we promote to governors that they still have the right to recall senators? Should legislatures not still have the power? Since the 17th Amendment only voted to pick them, and the Constitution's other senatorial provisions should uphold? And then, has the Supreme Court ruled on this?
Well, we don't need the Supreme Court to rule on this. We have already advised the legislators and the governors of every state of this union. We have literally in paper written to them in our case and advised them to, if their senators are not doing the will of that state, you know, the legislators or the governor can remove. I think, I'm not sure how that would work. We'd have to look into the laws of the state and the constitutions of the state. But they have the ability to recall that senator. It doesn't matter that the people elect them. Recall them. And let the, you know, then let the governor choose a person to send in as a senator, and the legislators got to approve that person, and then they send them into Washington. Let's see what Washington does with that, okay? It's that simple, because they need to control the Senate House. As much as the people need to control the Congressional House, they need to control the Senate. You see, for when the people make a mistake, the Senate can then the state can correct it. And when the state makes the mistake, the people can correct it. And if we have the swamp drained and all those animals and monsters, and believe me, the people are going to see them as monsters soon, let me tell you. You know, with all the evil that they've been doing and burying, and all the people that they've been murdering, and wars we've been to that we shouldn't have been to, and that they caused and funded, and I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But anyway, when that's all exposed, okay, if the people fill the voids and take control of the consent, as the Constitution tells us, as the Declaration of Independence tells us, we have government by consent of the people. And people consent to the judicial process by taking control of the juries, and people respond to the consent of the political process by taking control of the committee men, and nobody gets into office unless we, the people, say yay. Every election district comes together, every election period, to make the decision of any election that affects their election district, whether it be a senator, a congressman, a mayor, a governor, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. They get a voice in the opinion, and the people must walk the papers to get the signatures. Otherwise, they don't get onto the ticket. And if the people know enough to say, you're not, don't even come talk to me unless you know the Constitution, because I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions, and if you don't know the answer, just take a hike, buddy. We don't want you. Let's get statesmen into power. The people have the power and the authority. This is your consent. And we are going to take this back. We're doing that through the committees of safety. Join a committee of safety in your county. We're creating them in every county across America. And if you're not in one, get in one. And if there's not one in your county, start one in your county. And get the people together. Connect with your sheriff. Empower the sheriff. Back the sheriff. Educate the sheriff. And use the sheriff to come with you to talk to all your local governments within your county. Take control of the process. Become the committee men, because that's what the committees of safety did when our founding fathers joined the committee. They created committees of safety. They created our government. They ruled the government through the committees of safety. Until we became a nation, until we had a constitution, they elected a president. And they elected people with the authorities and the powers, okay, to run the government for the 10 years during that process until we became a nation in 1789, had a constitution, and George Washington became the first president of the United States of America. And when that happened, all the people of the committees of safety, they went in and became, they morphed into the committee man process that we have today. But we have been robbed of that. People think they've been elected. It looks like they've been elected. Anybody who looks into this says, yeah, they've been elected. No, they have not. And we've studied this in great detail. We have a lot of information under our educational tab. You can look up into political under education and read about the political process. Read about the committeeman process. Read about the petition process and what Washington had to say in his farewell address. He already saw the problems. Jefferson was so upset with this party nonsense. We need to get rid of all that. That needs to go. Okay? Well, how does it go? It's very simple. You know, it's already in our history. We already know how to do it. We've laid it out. We've got it here on our website. You can find all that information. You just have to get up and do it. If the people continue to be ignorant, we're not going to have a nation. And I don't care what Donald Trump does. He can put them all in jail. He can destroy them all. He can bring us back to make America great again. But how long is that going to last? Because evil will rise its ugly face again, and it will take control again. They can't help themselves. That's their nature. And so they will, wherever there's power, that's where you'll find evil working. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and spiritual wickedness in the high places. And that's both political and spiritual, in the church and in the government, both places. You want to find the devil, go to church. Go into the high places. You'll find him there, because that's where he's struggling to take the power. You want to find the devil in politics? Go into the politics. Go to the high places. You'll find him there. And you wish you never did once you do find him. But in any event, okay, we need to fill the voids to prevent that from happening. Only the people can save the republic. Only the people can save America. And if you don't do it, woe is us. Anything else, Jan?
One last one from an Ohioan, and it says, I have a small problem that has escalated to a large problem. Everyone tells me to file my documents with my county recorder's office in the county for which I live. I have tried and tried to get my documents recorded in the public, but at my county recorder's office, I'm told that under the Ohio revised code, that they only record things that have to do with land, titles, and mortgages. Can anybody help me here? Is there another avenue that I can take in order to get my documents recorded in the public? Or is there some violations they are committing?
There most certainly is. You can join National Liberty Alliance, become educated, learn the process, work with us to take back the nation, and then you'll be able to do these things. And I'm presuming you're trying. I'm not sure what papers they're trying to file. Maybe a statement of sovereign, of being a sovereign, or something of that nature. I know I had done that when I learned about that stuff, and I realized I didn't have to do it. I don't have to file anything with anyone. You know, look at, you want to be free, you have to start thinking free, speaking free, and then exercising what you're thinking and saying. If you don't if you don't do all three, you don't have liberty, you're not going to have freedom. So you have to start with the thinking and get to the doing. And it's that simple. You don't have to file your papers if you're filing something to be sovereign and stuff. Don't worry about that. Walk into the court and be sovereign. Walk in with an axe. Take the power and the authority you have. That's your knowledge. Lay it out. Look at when you lay it out in the judge. Let's understand this. If you walk into a village court, city court, or a town court, you're talking to ignorance, and there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance and power, and that's what you have there. You're not going to convince them of anything. You're not going to change their thinking. You're not going to change their decision-making. You're not going to do nothing to those people. So what you have to do is take the power away from them. And you, when they try to grab hold of you, they're doing it without due process. You take them into a federal court where you can control the court. And you take them in for trying to take control, assume for as much as you can get, not trillions of dollars, not $100 million. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. You know, assume for what's reasonable, what you think. Look, we're suing for the gun issue, $50,000 per individual. You know, I've got a case that's going where I'm chasing certain individuals, you know, maybe $20,000 per violation of my rights, because they're all people within government, you know, FBI or... well, I don't really go after the FBI, but Federal Reserve people, you know, the IRS, those individuals, okay? But you have to decide what your injury is worth and not be ridiculous about it. But nevertheless, you need to when you're stuck in one of those little rinky-dink Nisi Prius courts, which have no power to fine and no power to incarcerate. Let me repeat that. I don't know if everybody heard me on that. City courts, with the exception of New York City here in New York, city courts, town courts, village courts, have no power, no authority to fine you or incarcerate you. And yet 80% of the people in prison are there from those courts. What's that all about? They got that because the people believe they got power. Reality is the way one perceives it. We need to bring a new reality into play here. We need to let these people meet the true reality, okay? They don't have that power. And you let them know that by taking them right into a federal court to let them know you ain't got the power. You can't give me due process. And you sue them for violations of your unalienable right. You can get them for, right off the bat, violating your due process. That's the very main thing that you want to go after them for, okay? They have no jurisdiction over you. And you can win this in the federal court only if you can articulate your point, okay, and write the papers properly. And we're trying to teach people how to do that. Go read our paperwork and you'll see how we do it. We got about 10 memorandums out there, and I would say use them all the time. Let the court understand what kind of a court it is. You're walking into a federal court. This is an Article 3 court. Judge, you don't have the power or the authority to make any summary judgments. I don't think we wrote that memorandum yet, but we're going to write that one next. You haven't got the power or the authority to make any judgments here. This is a court of record. And if you know what a court of record is, well, let me explain it to you. And we do that in our footnotes. But in any event, you make all your positions, your legal positions and memorandums. You lay out the court case. You give that judge nowhere to pin or hang up his hat. Nowhere. Every place he goes to hang his hat is going to fall on the floor. He can't hang his hat anywhere. And when you do that and you articulate your point in the court, that judge is going to wonder about you, number one, and he's going to say, why am I going to put my rear end in way of jeopardy for this guy, even though he's a judge? And you know what I found out? We went into the federal courts, and I found out these judges seem to have great disdain for lawyers on the state level that have no experience in the federal courts. They also don't seem to like the judges too much either. So let's use that, okay? And unless you're on something really big, and unless you're good at it, then it's going to be hard to get through. You know, go up against the IRS, for instance. You really got to understand what's going on there and how to deal with those people. But generally speaking, going up after these little rinky-dink, stupid, silly Nisi Prius courts that have no power or authority to fine or to incarcerate, okay, and take a few thousand dollars out of this guy's pocket for violating your unalienable rights of due process, and let him get hammered down in that court, and realize it. Believe me, you will never go back into that court again. As soon as that judge, any judge sees you in that court, you're going to be dismissed, okay? But, you know, you can't do it if you're not educated. We've got the courses to educate you. You know, look, at if you don't know how the court system works, we took a course. We offer it to people. It's, goodness, what's the name of that course we use there, Gerard? How come I can't think of it? Oh, Juris Dictionary. Okay, Juris Dictionary. You'll find it on the right-hand side of our website. Now, we didn't write that course, and the person who wrote that course charges for it. I think it's $275 or something like that. It's a couple of $100. Well worth every dime, worth every penny. Okay, why? It's going to show you how to write papers. It's going to give the structure. It's going to show you how many papers, what the papers are to file, how to file a motion. It's going to show you about the causes of actions. And don't get too lost in the causes of actions, but you really got to be able to articulate causes of actions that they may not recognize as causes of actions. But that you can learn from us. So they'll teach you what the causes of actions are. They'll teach you how to prevent the court case from being thrown out because you don't hit every point of those causes of actions. And again, you know, when you go in, you know, you have to serve a summons, you have to file a papers, you got to get your index number, you know, all of these things. And you have to have the proper writing. There's forms. You look into the rules of the federal district court, and any form you need is already in the rules. I mean, they kind of lay out, this thing has to be in this form, these things have to be in that form, you have to make sure you cover this or that. I mean, it's all in there. But, you know, people just need to learn how to get around it. They need to learn how to structure it. They need to have the confidence of being able to structure it properly, okay? And that's why this jurisdictionary course is so great. And for that purpose, I tell the people, go spend the money. Now, anybody who takes that course and they take it, no matter where you go, you're going to pay the same amount, okay? But since we'll put it up on our website, we get $50 off of the money that the people pay in for every person we refer. So that $50 goes to National Liberty Alliance and the cause to save America. So by taking the course and helping yourself, you're also helping National Liberty Alliance, you're educating yourself, and you're educating your family. And only, you know, we only got one course, and we worked it together here at National Liberty Alliance. And we wrote a lot of papers and different things to assist people. We even wrote some booklets that you can get in our educational area from things that we had learned through the jurisdictionary course. So by all means, you know, this is what you have to do. Now, if you got a court case right now, bear in mind, to really get efficient in this, you'll have to put a lot of time and take you maybe a month to 3 months. I mean, I did the course in one weekend. Literally, I started on a Friday night. I said to myself, I'm not doing nothing until I get through to this course, and I went through Sunday. Now, that's just the beginning of the course. Even though I went through everything and I made notes and you know, created booklets for myself for reference books and so on. And now you got to really spend a lot of time working through this. And so it took me probably a good 3 months before I felt comfortable with the knowledge of those things. But I was able to do it in 3 days and get my books and everything together. So, because we had court cases going on at the time, and I was able to learn enough to be able to execute those papers properly. But it's some mistakes here or there, but hey, mistakes are part of learning, you know. So people need to do that. And if you give yourself 3 to 6 months, you should be pretty darn good at this. And again, you want to create books, or reference books. You know, print out the PDFs and put them in order. You can refer back to them. You know, I still use them for looking at causes of actions, and I look up the elements of the cause of an action. And, you know, cause of action, you might have to prove 3 points, okay? And so you have to prove A, and you have to prove B, and you have to prove C. Well, I make sure that I prove A, B, and C. So when these clowns come in, because every time I file a case, it's the same BS all the time. Every lawyer jumps in there and tries to throw the case out for not saying, given a cause of action, saying you didn't serve them properly. You know, it's just a shotgun effect by them. I now have the papers written, I just send them back in, you know. It's the same thing over and over again, okay? We cover our cause of action. We're confident in that. They can't kick us out for no cause of action. We cover and make sure that we serve these papers properly. They can't kick us out for not having that, okay? And those are the two major reasons they try to kick you out. And the judge, if he's holding up the status quo and working with these guys, okay, he's going to throw you out for these things if you don't know about it. If he sees your response that you don't know what you're talking about, you don't understand what they're doing and saying, he's going to say, you don't have a cause of action. Get out of here. You didn't serve him properly. Get out of here. You know? But it's the same thing over and over again. So they waste the first 90 days. In any court case, these lawyers, they waste the first 90 days. Let's just get the business. They can't get the business because they can't answer the questions if you frame them right. You see? If you know you got a good case and you're right and you're on the law and they're not, you're going to win. But you have to be able to defend that win. So. All right, where are we, Jen?
Okay, that was the last question that was submitted. Robert has a Western report that's very good tonight, if you're ready for that.
Yep, right ahead.
You're unmuted, Robert. Oops, I think you just muted again. There you are.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes.
After
we
all
can.
That. Okay, well, for Nevada, as predicted, case dismissed and not to come back. Cliven has gone home. So now, that's this case. Now they're telling the people who were found guilty in the previous cases that they're not covered by this dismissal. They're going to have to file additional actions to get those people released. But at least, as expected, it was dismissed. And that's what I have.
News. And look at, hopefully, papers that we filed for potential indictments. Hopefully, we're going to get all the indictments we're looking for when we bring it to the people. And if we do, and I believe we probably will, hopefully our indictments of all of these players out there will help them. We'll also, if we can get the names of the people that are in jail, we'll do a habeas corpus. So you can send the word out there to the people, for the people in jail. List them all out and get someone to give us a affidavit as a next friend. You know the drill, what needs to be done. Get that to us, and we will do a habeas corpus as soon as we get that paperwork.
Yeah, we have, I think it's four of them in jail, and we know who they are.
Well,
so we'll,
it's a perfect time for a habeas corpus because they know they're not guilty.
That's right.
They should let them out immediately. They shouldn't resist at all.
That's
I'm
right.
Telling you, timing is everything. Right now is a perfect time to do the habeas corpus.
And we will have the leverage also with filing the other papers and getting them up to Jeff Sessions and getting it up to the president and a few people in Congress, okay? Once we get all that out there and we file it in the courts and we go after this judge, and if the habeas corpus is going out at that point, I think they're at a good time. Things are really, the stars are lining up, you know?
We have one that hasn't even been sentenced yet. He's got to come back to Portland and see the judge in Portland to be sentenced.
Well, let's get him in here, too.
He was on trial in the Nevada case also. So, yeah, he'll be on the list.
All right. Try to get some details on these individuals so maybe we can write something personal in these habeas corpuses. But particularly we want to know is, you know, if we can get this knowledge on these people, you know,
oh,
why they took the plea, What were they feeling at the time? You know, why they took the plea? What kind of pressure was on them? What time were they threatened with that they were facing? You know, were they being threatened with 20 years, 30 years, take the plea, we'll give you five? You know, is that what took place? You know?
Yes, it is.
So that's what we want to know in that affidavit, that kind of stuff. Okay? We can have one person write it for all of them, but they need to give a little information on all of them if there's someone out there capable that's been on, you know, their fingers on the pulse on that thing.
Yeah, well, we'll have them.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Jan?
That's all I've got today. I just got home last night from Colorado, and that's about all I could manage today.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Hey, Robert, the Oregon case... Was that a not guilty verdict from that jury? It wasn't, or was it a mistrial? The Oregon. Do we remember?
They had not guilty, but there was a two of the people had a couple of charges that were guilty. So it was decided individually.
Yeah, but if majority of the jury said not guilty,
right.
That's it. End of subject, not guilty. Okay?
Right.
And so that makes it even easier, and we'll make those points. But, look it, they need to get due process. They never had it. They've never been indicted by a free grand jury. You know, the grand jury was tainted. They never had their chance of trial because, really, they were... subjected to their threats, you know.
Right.
They were threatened. I'll put you in jail for 30 years. You're going to get it, and you're going, and nothing's going to protect you. But I'll tell you what, if you
were talking 60, 70, 80 years.
See, we need that because they didn't have the power or the authority to do that, number one. And even the – look at – I'd love to see all the charges against them on what the grand jury charged them with and what they eventually went to court with. Because usually, quite often in cases like this, it's never the same thing. And they didn't have the power or the authority to change the decisions of the grand jury. If they wanted to add something, they had to go talk to the grand jury. If they wanted to take something away, they got to go talk to the grand jury. Because they were never given the power or the authority to make those decisions.
Well,
that's the consent of the people.
The main charge, I think, was conspiracy to keep federal officers away, right?
Yeah, well, nobody was found guilty of conspiracy.
Right. So the jury said that the prosecution never proved their case. I thought it was on conspiracy or whatever. Now, some of the people were charged with different charges. Like a couple of the guys took one of the trucks from there and went into town, and they arrested them when they were in town. That's a tough one for them to beat because they were in a vehicle that didn't belong to them. Right? It's theft as far as...
In actuality, right? It does. They're the people.
Yeah, but they're going to have to argue that, is what I'm saying. You can't tie that... That charge doesn't tie in to the other people. That was a completely separate charge based on their actions in that particular thing, except that they were in a protest.
And one of them that's in jail now, that's what he was charged with.
Right.
All right. Well, nevertheless, if we do a habeas corpus, they need to answer. If they don't answer, we're going to default them and free them. If they don't free them, then we'll send that to the president and Jeff Sessions and others also with all the other stuff that's going probably before this, which should be a lot of pressure on them. And then we will write a letter to the president asking, that he should maybe pardon them.
Listen, you think they would welcome your habeas corpus. It gives them an excuse to let them go.
That's right. Let's see what's going to happen.
Because if they go to trial and all this stuff comes out and all the collusion and the lying and everything, you would think that they would want to get rid of that.
Well, it's also going to be mixed with our indictments, too.
Let's, right. It was lies and deceit on all the trials that we've had so far. So, yeah, you'd think they'd be looking for a way to get out of it.
All right, we'll get the paperwork.
Got so much
together.
Egg on their face now. I mean, you know, but you know, like Thornton says, there's nothing as fearful as watching ignorance in action, and we've certainly seen a lot of that.
Yes, we have.
All right, we'll get it to us, Robert. Get us the paperwork on that, and we'll do what we can.
All right.
Okay, Jan, anything else here?
Nope, that's everything I had, and
okay,
that I know
Gerard,
of.
You ready to take the controls here, Gerard?
I'm busy.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
take
okay.
Okay. All right, we're going to move over to Brent. Okay, Brent Winters is going to speak with us tonight. He is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. I hope.
Okay, now I'm...
There you go. We got you.
Yeah.
And if you're able to answer that question, I don't know if you're able to find anything out on that. But
yeah. No, I did look. I'm not familiar with it. But if it's a Black's Law Dictionary, I could find anything on the Internet. But if it's a Black's Law Dictionary, usually there's an index in the front that gives a list of abbreviations and what they mean. So if you go to the front of the volume, you should be able to find something there. That's the way I have done it in the past. But it sounds like it could be also, too. Sometimes they'll quote, they'll use abbreviations from the British courts or the British government over in the UK, and that's possible, too. But the comment that was made about, that was read out of that Black's Law Dictionary, I wanted to say something about that, because it's always confusing. I've discovered over the years, when people talk about our common law, and I've searched for ways to explain this, or simple ways, and it doesn't make any difference how simple something is. If something is fixed in a fellow's brain, it's acclimated to a particular point of view. We're all this way. I'm this way, too. I've had experiences through the years where I've said, I can't believe. When the light finally went on, I say, I can't believe it took me that long to see what was right in front of my face, or right in my ears. And I find the common law is mysterious as the Trinity to most people. I realize it's a mystery, and that's why people are fascinated with it. And one of the things that comparative lawyers have said over the years, and they're right, I've discovered it to be true, is our common law is never known. It can't be known until a dispute, a real case in controversy, as our Constitution puts it, arises. Because our common law is not a list of laws. It is a course of process. It is due process. Due process is not part of our common law. I say this often. Due process is our common law. Because our common law, unlike the law of the city, our common law has also been called the law of the land, as our Constitution calls it, Article 6, the law of the land. That means due process. That phrase is lifted from Magna Carta, Lex Terra, in the Latin tongue. It means, that's the way they used to say, due process, because the law of the land has to do with the land, and the law of the city has to do with dominating people, period. The law of the city vindicates the powerful party. The law of the city is the Code of Justinian. The law of the city is called the civil law, the old Latin way, the Roman way of saying the law of the city. The city of Rome in modern times, the last 2,000 years, has been the center of that. But before that, it was Memphis down in Egypt. It was Pergamos in Asia Minor. It was Babylon. It was Nineveh. It was all the cities of the plains. It was all the Greek city-states. Always the city, the city, the city, and the city law, which came from the settling of the city of Babylon. It hasn't changed over the centuries, over the thousands of years. Fundamentally, it hasn't changed. And the only thing that has opposed it has been our common law. And our common law is fundamentally different in many ways, but one way is our common law is process-oriented. The law of the city is result-oriented. The law of the city, that's why the Jesuit order follows the law of the city at that point, the canon law of Rome, as all of the Roman Church. And the Jesuits' motto, and they're kind of the leaders of the Roman Church in this, their motto is that the ends justifies the means. Now, if you'll talk to a Jesuit, they'll say, well, you're not understanding that statement. You've got to go read it in context. And they say all sorts of things. Well, I just say there's a legal word for that. I went and read it. Baloney. I can read St. Thomas Aquinas. I know what he's saying. Yeah, I'm not, it's in English. I can read it. No, the ends justifies the means. That's the way it is in every administrative court in America. That's the way, that's the law of the city. That's the way it is in every bureaucratic court, all the tax courts. That's the way it is in all of the world, all of South America, all of the communist countries. They're under the code of Justinian, the law of the city. All of the European continent, all of Vietnam, all of Russia, China, everywhere except the small handful of common law countries. Outnumbered we are, but we're not outgunned. We're the most prosperous people, the most prosperous, powerful countries in the world, and there's a reason for it. The reason is because of our law, because our law is process-oriented, not result-oriented. We don't say when we go into court, the judge, well, he shouldn't. It is our tradition. We don't say, well, I've got to make sure this fellow wins, like Mussolini in Italy. I want these men to have a fair trial, and then I want them shot. Well, that's the way they think in those countries, and that makes us laugh, maybe. But they don't laugh. They understand that. It's the way they live. That's the way it is in Russia, too. You go through the motions, but due process means nothing. It's not genuine. But to us, hopefully, we have common law sensibilities. Now, the statement was made with that Black's Law Dictionary quote that, when I say process-oriented, I mean we concentrate on the process, not the result. And we believe if we concentrate on due process, that the result will be fair and just. And that's right, it will. And the Bible teaches the same thing over and over and over. That's why the law of God is called the way. The Derek, the wagon road in the Hebrew tongue, the Odos in the Newer Testament, the wagon road, the way. And the word Torah, the most oft and all-encompassing Hebrew word in the Older Testament, translated law, is from an old verb older than the Bible, Yaraf, that means the way pointed out with the index finger. So it's process-oriented, way, you see, W-A-Y. The same thing is true of our common law. Well, the statement was made a while ago about the Black's Law Dictionary quote that where the common law and the statute agree, the common law takes precedence. Well, that's the way I heard it. Maybe I've got a little wrong, but you see, that's a kind of a sensitive statement. I'll tell you why. If the common law and the statute agree, it doesn't make any difference which one of them is used. It's going to come out the same. But I think I know what they mean by that, because this is true in our common law tradition. Where there's a statute and where there's the common law, and the two are, I don't say agree, I would say where they're consonant, where they're not in absolute contrary head-on contradiction, where two things cannot be true at the same time in the same relationship. It can't be true. I can't say A equals non-A. That can't be true. That's contradiction. Now, I can say A equals B, you see. Some people say, well, A can't equal B because A is not B. No, that's, you don't know what B is yet, and you may not know what A is, but you can't say it's a contradiction yet. But if I say A equals non-A, yeah, that's a contradiction. Something, two things, that's something that can't be true at the same time. Well, that's why I like to say if the statute and the common law are consonant, they're not contradicting each other. They may be a little bit different, a different application maybe. The common law takes precedence, and the reason for that is this. Because in America, when you go to court, the judicial branch is not the branch that has the power. It doesn't have the guns. All it's got is the prestige, black robes, and a few marshals, or maybe some bailiffs. But we obey the courts because it's part of our common law tradition to show respect and say your honor and all that stuff that people say is baloney. It's very important. It's us and our common law country saying, well, we believe the courts in final instances and individual instances, the jury and the courts apply the law. And the court decisions, they follow the court decisions that are above them in their appellate hierarchy. every state courts that way in America because we're a common law country. That's not true in France and Germany and South America. When they go to court, they've got a set of statute books in front of them called the Code of Justinian, called the Code of Napoleon, called the Code of Bismarck. It's all the same thing. Or you go to the Roman Church, they've got the canon law, and it is fundamental, absolutely fundamental to them. The unwritten reality that they cannot break as judges, and there aren't any juries, so they don't have to worry about that. But they're not allowed, they're forbidden, barred, forbidden from going back and consulting what a previous tribunal has said about a situation like theirs. They don't do that. In our common law tradition, we have to do that. In the law of the city tradition, the civil law tradition, all they look at is the language of the code, and they parse the verbs, and they don't think about anything else because the code is the law. We don't say that in our common law country. When our judges get done, we still say this, and we don't ask why we say it, and we don't notice that it's different from the whole rest of the world. But we say of the courts, well, what's the finding of the court? The finding? Well, why do we say that? We say that because we've never believed for thousands of years in our English-speaking world. We've never believed fundamentally that law is something that men make in their minds. It's something they find. Because true law, if it's right, it's eternal. It has no time on it. It's an everlasting principle. It never changes. And so our courts still say that. That's a vestige of our ancient past, utterly lost in the fog of antiquity, going back to Britain, going back then to the area of Jutland over in, which is now Denmark, over in Europe, where the Anglos, the Saxons, the Danes, and the Celts used to live. And then before that, we can see that that spread out through the Germanic tribes, but we lose. And the reason we lose it in the fog of antiquity is because those folks didn't write it down. They didn't know how to write. Writing wasn't part of their lives. The thing that was part of their lives was the oral tradition, and that's another fundamental of our common law. Our common law is an oral tradition. We go in court and we talk. I just got out of court. Testimony, 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 under sworn. That didn't guarantee anything, but cross-examination sure guarantees something. But we speak out loud. We don't shuffle papers back and forth in secret like they do in France and Germany and South America and China and Russia. That's fundamentally the law of the city. It's not an oral tradition. And why isn't our tradition oral? Because back in our past, our forebears, most of them couldn't read and write, even the ones in government. Wasn't part of our world. English wasn't put to right until 800-900 AD. Isn't it something, though, that we retain that tradition? And good thing we do, because if our courts weren't oral, we couldn't go in and watch and see and make our own judgment about whether things were being done right. And the newspapers and the press couldn't come and watch and see. There wouldn't be anybody to hold them accountable. I see it more though in our courts. Sealed documents. Nobody can look at them. Sealed indictments. That's the stuff of totalitarianism, friends, neighbors, and kin. And we must demand and keep saying no, no, no. Secret trials are part of the evil empire, part of the law of the city, part of the Roman Code of Justinian and the canon law. No, 1,000 times no. We in America should have sensibilities. We should say, bring it out in the open. We never did have hangings of men in private. No, our hangings have always been public. Now, I'm not making a point we should go back to hangings, but what I'm saying is, in America, our common law has always said everything is done in the open. Everything is done in the daylight. That's not true in the rest of the world. And God help us. We have secret tribunals in America now. Some of those fancy new courts, those wiretapping courts, all that baloney under the Patriot Act. Cut the cloak and dagger crap. Let's get on with it. Let's get on with making things out in the open, up front. No, there's not that much out there that needs to be secret. And all you can see what happens when that happens, when the CIA, the NSA, all those alphabet soup minions, all of them acting like they're doing something important and secret. I tell you, our country would be a lot better off, a lot more secure, if we just went up, like our common law says, just went up and kept everything public. Nothing was allowed to be in secret. You know, a common law anciently, and this is a principle that was in England, you were to raise the hue and the cry. When there was a crime committed, you better start screaming if you know about it. You better be screaming loud. And then the idea was everybody who heard the scream, they were supposed to scream too. And the scream then began to spread. And as it spread out over the countryside, nothing was sealed, nothing was hidden, and everybody was up in arms. As Paul Revere said, everybody up to arms, up in arms. That means be a send the alarm. Nothing in secret. Let's get out. This is going to be a fair fight in front of the world. And that's what our courts are. They're a fair, supposed to be anyway, a fair fight in front of the world. Look at the Declaration of 76. Having a decent respect for the opinions of mankind, we declare to the world. The Declaration of 76 is a common law complaint, and it declares to the world, and it was written in such a way to be fair. Magna Carta the same way. Magna Carta wasn't written in Latin because they wanted it to be hidden from the world. No, it was written in Latin. So all of the educated world, that was the international language at that time, Latin, everybody could read it. And by the way, when the Pope read it, he blew a proverbial head gasket and excommunicated King John and everybody involved in the drafting, namely mostly Stephen Langton, though he was the chief drafter. But declare it. There comes a point when you can't retain your freedom unless you raise the hue and the cry. And besides that, it's a good idea, because if you don't, God says you see these things happening and you don't say something about it, when the hell falls from heaven on your head, it'll fall on the other fellow's head, it'll fall on yours too, because you didn't raise the hue and the cry. And that's part of our common law tradition. You've got to say something if men are doing evil. Now, I know, well, I've had it happen. You say something, it could get you in more trouble. Look at the fellow over there in England. What's his name, Assange? Look at that fellow over in Russia, whatever his name was, the whistleblower. Oh, yeah, it'll get you in trouble. But I'd rather think that we're not to fear men who can only kill the body, but we are to fear God. The writer of the Hebrews says to fear God because he has the power to cast body and soul into hell. And he's the one we are to be concerned about. All these Tissiani men, when we look at them, I've been around some powerful, important men in my life. I guess the thing that amazed me was how nothing they were when I kind of got to be around them and see what they were. Void of backbone, no grizzle to them, no grizzle at all, no gristle, just weak men who were in positions, had hold of levers of power, and were often abusing people. Now, we're not going to do away with all that. So what are we going to do? We're going to do what God tells us to do. And it starts, if I've made any conclusions in my life, I'm not an ancient man, but neither am I a young man anymore. But I've made conclusions that what really matters and what really will change things is not being so concerned about what's going on in the White House and the courthouse, but it only changes there when you're concerned about what goes on in your house. And that needs to be said over and over again. It's you and it's me. Are we doing truth? The people that scream the loudest, I had a guy telling me once, the people that scream the loudest about government largesse and wasting money and all that, he said, this little fellow, he's gone now. He told me, you look and you'll find they're the ones that are getting more money from the government than anybody else. And I found that to be true in a lot of cases. And I find also that those that scream about government a lot, you got to watch them. There are those that are very sincere, but there are those too. The ones that are screaming about government, they're tyrants themselves. And they want to get a hold of the levers of power so they can do other people what other people have been doing to them. It doesn't work that way. And if you do that, it's just the it'll just get worse. That's what happened in the English Revolution. That's what happened after the American Revolution. And those are the things we must guard against, because we cannot use. But Martin Luther made this mistake in Germany. He said we've got to take on, they had the common law in Saxony still at that time. It was very much a part of their lives. And, of course, those were the same people, the Saxons, that had come to Britain centuries before. They still had use of the jury. Martin Luther said, after he gained influence, he said, the only way we're going to beat Rome is to take on the Roman law and let our German electors have that power so that they can use, they can fight fire with fire and have the power they need to fight. And he did. So what was the result? It took years, but it just kept coming and coming until the Code of Bismarck was enacted in 1900, until World War I happened, until Hitler took those very same concepts that Martin Luther, as great a man as he was and used of God to do many great things, good things. He didn't understand what he was doing, but he did that. And that's what enabled Adolf Hitler to come to power, the Roman law. They took the Roman Code, renamed it the Code of Bismarck back in the year 1900, enacted it officially, and look at the despair that came from that in Germany. Germany is still, Germany's never come out of it. She was bombed to oblivion. Manhood was gone. I've heard, well, what I read about Germany just makes me ill almost. And it wasn't necessary. So what I'm trying to drive at is we must be on guard. Never has the onslaught of the law of the city been greater against us, against anybody, all over the world than it is here. Now, because just as King John, who signed Magna Carta at the points of swords, he had sold out his country, promised the whole country to the Islamic Sultan of Morocco if he would loan him the money, the gold and silver he needed to fight the landowners. At the same time, he had promised the Pope of Rome that he would make all of England, all of the land of England, the Pope's as a fiefdom to pay him tribute if he would give him the money he needed to fight the landholders of England. And having done, hocked the whole country up twice to two foreign pontiffs, one Islamic, under a promise to make England Islamic. And then he had borrowed money from the moneylenders, the Pharisaical moneylenders in England, at rates from 42 to 83% per year. And of course, all he was doing was hocking up the landholders, and then taking the money that he would get from doing that and wanted to crush the landholders. Magna Carta just didn't happen because they thought it was a good idea. They were desperate. And the Pope of Rome had an army assembled in France, poised to invade. And that's when the landholders said, well, we got the Islamic hordes coming in on us, the Roman Pope with his armies coming in on us, and we're hocked up to our gills to the moneylenders in England. This has got to stop. We've got to do something. Now, is our situation any different today? Are we hocked up to the gills to the moneylenders in our own country called the Federal Reserve Bank? Is Islam, has it become such a force that we're afraid to talk against it and say, no, we don't want it, we don't want Sharia law? And is the whole idea of civil canon law and bureaucratic law and the CIA, the FBI, the TSA, blah, 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 people wanting to play Dick Tracy, is that whole idea coming crashing in us, on us, the police state? As I look around, I think I see that. And I didn't used to see it. It wasn't there, not like it is now. It's in small town America. What does it mean we have to do? Well, it comes down to two things, and I'll end with this, John. Anciently, our common law says we have two duties. And our forebears, the Anglo-Saxons and the Anglo-Danes in England, they didn't call it the common law. That didn't come up till later, till after before the Reformation in England. They called it the Volkerrecht. The Volkerrecht, with a T on the end. That was corrected by a German speaker not long ago. It's not the Third Reich. They're Germanic words. Reich and Reich are two different words. Reich doesn't mean what Reich means. Reich in German means R-I-G-H-T, like our word Reich. Our word Reich is a Germanic Anglo-Saxon word. And it means duty. It's not something selfish. Your rights are not something. These are mine. I got my rights. No. No, your rights are your duty. Second Amendment gives you rights. No, it doesn't give you rights. It protects rights that God gives you. These are fundamental rights. The right to self-protection, for example. It's a duty to keep and bear an arm. It's not an option. Never has been a common law. Go back and, well, okay, to go back, it takes a lot of work because you've got time to do that. But that's the way it's always been in Granville Sharp in England. After in Britain, he studied the subject years ago. He said it's always been the duty of Englishmen to be armed and to be expert at arms. That's part of our duty as Americans. We are a common law country. Well, the two duties of the Volkreich, Volk means folk, and Reich means law, duty. The people's duty. Two duties the people have. Government, the common law belongs to us. Yes, and the two duties are simple. We see it in the oath that our Constitution of the United States, which is a brief of common law government and compact draft of the Supreme Court, has told us. They're right. A brief of common law government, and to be an officer, an official in government in our country, state or federal, our Constitution, which is, again, a common law brief of government, tells us that all these officers have taken oath. Even a young buck private, even a boy coming out of high school, joining the Navy or the Army, he's supposed to take an oath. Officers from the military academy, they take the same oath. Every person in government takes this oath, except the President of the United States. He takes an oath that's powerful. But it's not exactly the same, and there's a good reason for that, because he's the commander-in-chief. But the oath is this. The oath is this. To support and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. That oath, that's so well known, is ancient. They didn't make that up when they drafted the Constitution. That's been part of our common law tradition for centuries. And when you were in England, you took an oath to the landlord to support and defend him in loyalty, and support and defend the law of the land. What was the law of the land? Common law, due process. And due process is applied in many different ways. It's not always the same application. We don't even know what it is, says the Supreme Court, until the need for it arises. What is the process that is due and owing in every case? Well, they took this oath to support and defend the law of the land. That's what it was all about. And how do you do that? Well, you do it two ways, against enemies foreign. That's what they said centuries ago. During the days of King Alfred, around 800, 900 A.D., to defend the law of the land, because when you defend the law of the land, you defend the land. The land is what's important here. The land is where the jurisdiction is. This is our land, and we each live on a parcel of real estate, whether we own it or rent it. We have rights. Wherever we live, maybe you live under a bridge someplace. If you're taking care of that parcel of real estate, God has bequeathed it to you. Be good about being a good steward of it, because the land's important to the allodial landlord, God himself. Well, that oath has two parts. It's your duty. Here's what you do. People used to call me when I was on the radio 10 years ago. They'd get all worked up, and they'd say, well, what do I do? And I had to go think about it. I went home, and I thought about it. Thought about it when I was shaving. I thought about it when I was walking. I thought about it when I was driving. Finally, it dawned on me. This is too simple. Our common law gives every man two duties. To defend the law of the land, which is to defend the land. And that's what we're given a duty to do that, by the way. That goes clear back to Adam and Eve. Defend the parcel of real estate you got. Adam didn't do that. That's why we're in this deplorable condition. We're still supposed to work at it. Two duties. Enemies foreign. That means armed defense as a militiaman. Enemies domestic, that means you're willing to serve on the jury or bring suit where necessary to vindicate the law of the land, the due process, or common law. That's your duty. And taking that oath doesn't give anybody any duties. Taking the oath only strengthens a duty you already have as an American. Every person lives on land, and God demands of every person that he take care of that land, defend it against defilement. How do you do that? Well, that means you don't defile it. You don't do things on it. There are violations of the conditions of land tenancy. We call them the Ten Commandments. They're part of the land deed called Deuteronomy in the Bible. But all of these are principles. These are first principles that have come down to us through our common law. And all those words in our constitutions, all those words of our common law, they're very important. And they're ancient. These concepts are ancient. They are eternal. They're as old as the mind of God himself, fundamentally. I know they're expressed in different words, in different times, in different ways. The applications are different through the centuries. We have, for example, we have surveillance equipment that's highly sensitive. Now they didn't used to have that. But the principle doesn't change. You got to have a warrant. That doesn't change. You got to have authority. That's what a warrant is. So bring it down to simplicity for yourself. What is your duty? So I tell people on the radio, okay, here's what you do. Number one, you buy a military-grade weapon and 500 rounds of ammunition. You take a good, solid safety and marksmanship course and get a certificate. And then you store your weapon safely and you stand by. That's one thing you can do. Just stand by, wait for orders. Because the powers that be have a duty to the governor in our states under our Constitution, under our militia clauses, has a duty to exercise discretion to call out the militia, as does the President of the United States or any part of it at different times, depending upon who takes jurisdiction first. That's our Constitution of the United States putting in place the common law first principles of our militia. That's enemies foreign. Enemies foreign. That means armed defense if necessary. What's your second duty? Your second duty is enemies domestic. Are you willing to serve on the jury? Have you served on the jury? Are you willing to get on the jury? And are you willing to withstand 11 other people screaming at you and telling you off and threatening you because you want to follow the law of the land and they want to go home and watch TV and sit on their duffs and eat peanuts and drink beer? Are you willing to do that? Do you have the guts? Do you have the gravel to do those things, to defend the law of the land? That's what needs to be done. Those are the two things fundamentally. Grand jury, same thing. Grand jury said a while ago, we assemble the jury. We think we'll get an indictment. Federal prosecutors don't talk that way. They just say, well, we'll assemble the jury and get an indictment. We'll go through the process, the due process of doing all that stuff, putting the jury together, and then we'll make them do what we want. And as the Hyde Commission said, back when I was involved in politics, old Henry up there in Chicago, Henry was the head of the Hyde Commission, and he said, after it was all over, he made the comment. He said a federal prosecutor with a grand jury could indict a ham sandwich. That is no exaggeration. But if you're on the grand jury, I hope that doesn't happen. You tell the federal prosecutor, get out of the room. We've got business to take care of here, and you're not part of it. We don't want you here. And then if you have to, you investigate him. And you start asking for documents about his life and what he's done wrong. You investigate the assistant U.S. attorney. You investigate anybody you want. You can investigate the people they ask you to investigate, too. You can investigate other grand jurors. That's the power of the grand jury. Are you willing to do that? Enemies domestic, you see. Grand jury, petit jury. Enemies foreign, a member of the militia. And being a member of the militia, by the way, doesn't just mean you have a weapon. It doesn't do that. There's a lot of things militiamen do. And the militia exists, whether or not anybody says it does. The common law, God gives the duty of self-protection to men, and our Constitution tries to organize it in a fashion, according to our common law, that it can be used readily. The militia is no good unless they're minutemen, unless they can be mustered quickly. That's why the right to keep and carry a gun is so important. And hey, you have to have it with you. That's what the militia is all about. Never forget, I'll end with this. Amazingly, that vicious beast called Nazi Germany never even considered invading Switzerland. Never considered it. Matter of fact, the German general came to talk, a big shot German general, one of them came to talk to the Swiss general during the war and said, We've got 250,000 men poised to invade if we have to. And the Swiss general said, well, I've got 125,000 men. He said, well, what will you do if we invade? He said, well, I'll just give them each two rounds of ammunition. They're excellent marksmen, and they'll both fire their weapons. We'll turn around and go home, and you'll be all dead. And so they never did invade. That's the kind of a country we need to live in. And now, they're not a common law country in Switzerland, but their particular militia idea is workable for them. I think ours is better under the Constitution if we'd use it. Enemies foreign and enemies domestic. Well, I'm done. Thank you again. The things that I say are not necessarily the opinions of National Liberty Alliance. They're my opinions. But I'm thankful they let me to say a few words about our duties as Americans.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. We're going to open up for conversation, so if you're going to hang around for a while, maybe there'll be questions for you. Gerard had to step away from the computer. He had a fire call, so I don't know if he'll be back before we end. But let's go to our first caller. Let's see. We'll go to, let me see, California Fred. You got the mic. Go right ahead. California Fred.
Can you hear me, sir?
We can hear you.
God, you took me by surprise.
I woke you up, huh?
No, I was scrambling to get the mouse. You can now ask a question. You
know? Yeah, I usually do that when Brent passes it over and I'm in control and Gerard's and I am looking. But today I was on top of it.
Well, I guess I don't have to say this, but I think I should. It's been 3 weeks since we spoke last, and a lot has happened.
Amen.
I mean, a lot. Just the number of sealed indictments out there over what I've heard of numbers from 1,500 to 3,000 to 1,100.
We got up to 10,000 now, we heard.
10,000.
Numerous sources.
And this new executive order that Trump signed, I don't know about you, Mr. Duresh, but I think that National Liberty Alliance should spend maybe 1 hour on with Fred Winters going through that thing and laying out exactly what it means.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an opinion because I read it as a layman. As a layman, it scares the hell out of me. It makes me think that they're declaring martial law on everybody.
Which one is this now?
Well, it's the new executive order where he is going after organized crime and corruption and trafficking of minors and children.
In a sense, it is. And, you know, look at, I forget the number. I don't want to exaggerate the number, but I will just say it's many, many hundreds. Of Marines, I believe it was, or could be from different services, but I think it was Marines, if I recall, was sent to what is it, Guantanamo Bay, they call it? What's the name of that place? Guantanamo Bay, I think it is, right?
Guantanamo, down in Cuba.
Right.
I heard it was the Arizona National Guard that went there.
It may have been, but I heard it was hundreds of individuals that were sent down there and to prepare for high-profile prisoners. And also quite a bit of money was just put down there also. So that's telling us something's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. And I think, we are at war. The Civil War has begun, and it's physical, and it's happening. And it's not just in the United States. It's around the world. Anybody that's paying attention and looking at all these things, you can put the whole picture together. So the Civil War has begun. I think it's never going to hit the streets, but it could. So we need to realize that. I don't think it ever will because I think he took the head out. And once you take the head out, that's it. You know, the tail, where is it going to go? What's it going to do? It's headless. You know, there was a call for people to hit the streets from the other side, so to speak, and start to, you know, complain and this, that, or the other thing. But that seemed to have fallen by the wayside. Nothing has happened. And you know, they don't have the will that we have. We're still sleeping, but I mean, if we did hit the streets, we have a different kind of a will. And most of us are the veterans. You know, we're already trained, and many of us are hunters, and so on. And the other side, remember, they're against the guns. I doubt if they even have guns. So I don't know. But I don't think it's going to hit the streets. I think it's going to stay where it's at. And I think it's going to be revealed soon. Hey, remember, this has got to be really, really flushed out pretty darn good by the time the State of the Union comes about, I think. And the State of the Union comes out at the end of the January, doesn't it? The end of the month. Might even be the same day, the 20th, as when the inauguration day. But it's going to come out, you know, President will give the State of the Union at the end of the month. And I have a feeling it's going to be in the press by then. But I could be wrong, you know. I don't really know exactly the timing of any of this stuff. But it does appear that it's going to be soon. So we'll see what happens.
When I was in the military, I was led to believe that the President of the United States was the President of America, and the Vice President represented Europe in America.
I never heard that.
I did. But, well, never mind that. The point I'm making here is maybe part of this roundup is the United Nations itself, because they have turned around.
It absolutely is.
And they have pretty much gutted the Marshall Plan that America set in place to free these countries, and now they're being invaded by Muslims. We're going to have to go through Normandy again.
Look, the whole thing's focused around Pizzagate, you know, the slave traffic, the pedophilia rings. I mean, it's all focused around that. And that's a genius plan, really. I mean, as simple as it is, you know, that is the way to go after these people. Because after that, okay, no one's going to be able to argue for these people. And that's that. Then all the other stuff comes up out of that, after that, what they've been doing, and the real sin, the real evil. I mean, not that slavery isn't. Of course it is. That's the worst of it all. But I mean, but the sins that they've been committing, you know, for 100 years, if I may, to destroy this nation and to control the people through these slave rings and pedophilia rings and stuff, that's how they controlled all these people. They got them, you know, caught up in that, and then they control them for life, and that's that. That's how they controlled our country, the nation. That's how they control many of the countries.
Okay, let me throw this little cherry on top of your 3 or 2 scoops of ice cream. During his speech today, Trump made a comment.
That was a great speech, wasn't it?
About Andrew Jackson.
Yes.
Now, let me remind some of us around here that Andrew Jackson totally disrupted the banking so that it took 75 years for the cabal to come back into America. And if there's anything that Trump understands, it's nationalism, it's banking.
Absolutely. Look, he's not going to say it, but I think he just hinted to it. And what was before the year was out, he was determined to get this major, major tax reduction. And that's just to get the hearts of the people. He's got a lot more work to do on that. He knows it. We know it. And they must be going crazy over there at the Federal Reserve. And, you know, I'm sure he has a plan. This guy is brilliant, and he is a money guy. So, look, I'm sure he has a plan to prevent, to give us a safety net, so to speak, when the monetary system collapses. And maybe he's got a plan that he can move it over slowly, like Kennedy was trying to do. Kennedy was trying to move things back slowly with the silver certificate, and of course they knocked him out, and the silver certificate, you know, just fell apart and went away right as soon as he died. And matter of fact, the next year, I think it was, they pulled all silver out of the coins. So I think he's got a plan, because it's got to happen soon. Look, this isn't our debt anyway with the Federal Reserve. That's their debt. The whole thing was a con job, fraud, and anybody wants their money, go see the Rothschilds. Now, I know there was a huge seizure of money, something like 100 metric tons of gold. Now, I did hear that was the Navy had that, is why I understand the story right. They were transporting it. And that's part of the money that they're looking to reset the, you know, the economy of the world, really. But it's not just that. It was other places. But I heard that that was robbed as it was in transit. But they also, I heard that they know exactly who these people were, and they're going to get it back. In any event, you know, none of this stuff is being reported in the news. And that's why we call it the fake news and propaganda. You know, as good as Fox has been, even they haven't been reporting it. But Fox is a recent convert, though, and who knows. But we'll see where that goes. But nevertheless, look it. There's plenty of gold out there. The Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and the Warburgs. I mean, all of these different families and stuff. They hold most of the gold of the world. We could fix it. We'll get it. We'll confiscate it. He's already started by going after the resources of all the people involved with this, and those families are all involved with it, aren't they? So he's already seizing money.
Exactly.
And it's around the world.
Exactly my point.
Yep, exactly, yeah. He has a plan, and I think he's got them, you know, stuck in between a rock and a hard place over there in the Federal Reserve. They can't move right or left. They don't know which way. They can't move anyway. They're kind of stuck to just following his orders at this point. And I think they know they lost. It's only a matter of time.
Well, something else I heard, I'm not sure, but it would take Mr. Winters to comment on this as well. What was going on with the Clinton Foundation, they're supposed to be a tax deduction charity, and somehow they never filed the right paperwork with the IRS.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
I don't know what that means for anybody that took a deduction, but it's been my experience that the IRS says, well, we can go back 3 years, then from there, if they find a problem, they go back 7 years, and then if they find a problem, they go back 10 years from there, and then if they find a problem, they go back forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no statute of limitations with those boys.
Well, they go back as far as they want under any circumstances. I happen to know that as a fact. They just do whatever they please. They make it up as they go. They control the court system that they're in. It's an administrative process, but people think it's got the power to indict and the power to power to fine and power to incarcerate, and they do. So people get up and go to jail because they're told to, and so on and so forth.
Can we get the grand jury to go after the Internal Revenue Service and have them audit the people that didn't put up their share of the money back when they created the Federal Reserve?
Well, look, it is part of our plan. It is absolutely part of our plan to go that direction if we have to, but now is not the time for that. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what the time is for, okay? And I didn't think it would be this quickly. 9/11 is the time. And you know what? This president knows exactly what took place on 9/11. He knows all the players. And that's a lot for the people to get. You know, if he went after him for 9/11, he'd be called a conspiracy nut. The people wouldn't listen to the argument and the debate and all that stuff. And even the prosecution would be called a fraud, and they're just trying to put these people in jail. And it itself could cause a revolution in the streets. But the way he's going about it, using the sex trades, okay, around the world, that is the issue that's destroying these people. And everything else after that will surface after that. After all, at that point, people will see them for what they are, monsters.
I keep hearing about slave trading blocks in Africa where they're selling people.
Yep.
And you don't see a word about it on the news. You might see it on
millions and millions of people. It's huge. That tells you how corrupt the world leaders are, because it's the world leaders involved in that, and, of course, Hollywood and many, many others. So, anyway.
Thank you for your time. I'm going to mute out now.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our next, let's see, it is, who'd we just, Eric. Go right ahead, Eric.
Thank you. Good to have you back. Okay, so I went on this call, these fellas, I don't know if you ever heard of them, BP Earth Watch, his name is Jesse, and then this other retired Marine, Steve Motley. They do a radio show, I think they have a working title. It might be the actual title. It's called Patriots Next Door. And I've mentioned the 17 prosecutors that Sessions had hired, and I was saying that maybe, just maybe, even though it was probably wishful thinking, that this is something to do with the NLA. And what I was doing was I was pushing the NLA to them and trying to get them to listen and come to the homepage. They actually asked me to come back because they want updates on what the NLA is doing, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So it was a good talk that I had with these fellows and the good people, but is it just wishful thinking that these 17 prosecutors might have something to do with what we want done and you getting the prosecutors that you want done, or what's going on in New York? The papers that you
well,
have?
Hopefully that could be the case. You know, we're ready to send more paperwork up to Sessions, and we've kind of backed off pushing Sessions because we started to realize that it looks that really the game has been in for a long time and he hasn't been sitting on his hands at all, and he appears to be avoiding things when in fact he's been very busy behind the scenes and in all these indictments were going on. So thankfully we didn't rush too quickly to go after Jeff Sessions hard. But at some point, if we have to, we will. Jeff Sessions is 100% wrong dealing with this problem with drugs. It's not the way to go. And to make things even worse with the hemp and also with the painkillers. You know, this is a huge, huge problem. These people, and you know what? We're just going to remove it from them because they become irrelevant. If we deal with this in the courts and we go after the judiciary and we bring the law of the land back into where it belongs in the courts, okay, it's irrelevant what Jeff Sessions says, and it's irrelevant even if the president is wrong what he says, because they don't make the law, and we'll take away those laws. We'll get rid of them through nullification to begin with, and we'll control the courts through the process of law, because the law must control the court, you know. So
yeah.
We'll see what goes on, and at some point, at some point something should happen. This 9/11 thing. We know that Trump knows what's going on there. I think it's really important that 9/11 is the next thing we do for an indictment and bring it up before the grand jury. See, and I'm sure we'll get an indictment. But anyway, we'll bring it up and we'll see. But first we have to deal with what's in the news today, the Bundy situation. And, of course, we've got to get to the LaVoie-Finnegan case. This is an extremely important case. And we need to put that man in front of the people so that people know who he really was. You know, they called him all kinds of evil things, but you watch the 2.5-hour documentary piece that we put together on him, and he truly was a patriot and a person who was interested in the law and the law being applied. It becomes clear. No jury is going to miss that.
Yeah. That's great, and I think you should stay focused on that, and I think the time is now. You asked the question, why would people not want, and I think you already know what the answer is, why would people not want to let others have medicinal marijuana? You know, it's this 12-year-old girl, I think, in Colorado, and this is someone that NLA members might want to seek out and educate her and her family. This 12-year-old young lady who's used medicinal marijuana, and it's changed her life. She stopped her seizures as a result of daily ingestion of medicinal marijuana. She's suing Sessions and I forget who else because of what Sessions has done. But I don't know if I told you this before, but I heard Sanjay Gupta, who of course is on CNN, so, you know, grain of salt here, but he said he seemed to be mystified by how he had a documentary called, I think it was called Weed, and he was talking about medicinal marijuana and merits. By the fact that the federal government had both outlawed medicinal marijuana but also had a patent on it as an antioxidant and a neuroprotectant. In other words, it's good for you. It's an antioxidant protecting your neuro or your brain cells. And you seem mystified by it, but the obvious answer is that this is what tyrants love to do. They make money off of both jailing you for it, and also they make money off of selling it to you legally. I mean, it's just part of their scam. They got their finger in every single pie that there is.
Oh, absolutely.
So anyway, Yeah. So I want to answer that question, and then even though I'm pretty sure you knew the
answer. Let me ask you, what are you calling in on today? Using the phone?
Yeah. Is it,
because you're,
is
fading
it too
loud? In, you're fading in and out. As you're talking, it's getting lower and it's higher and lower. You can hear you, you know?
Yeah, no, I always do it on my phone. It's an app. It's an app that I have on my phone from a free conference call. It might just be that it's over the Wi-Fi. So, yeah, generally I don't think it does this, but it might be doing it right now. As you're saying, I'm sure it
is.
Yeah,
it's coming in and out. Maybe you're not close enough to your Wi-Fi, but whatever. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, have you heard what I said?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then, you know, I was also hoping you might do, and I've mentioned this to you before, probably over a year ago, and you said you were working on it. I know you're real busy, and I do want you to stay focused on what you're doing. But I still would like you to do a point-by-point, real simplified. I know you have it on the website, how to do it. But if you could just boil it down and make it real simple, just go point-by-point from removing from a jurisdiction unknown inferior court, removing duty to the federal level, a court of record, such as writing the summons, filing papers, getting the index number, writing the form, and all of that. If you could just do it in a real simplified version, I think that would help people so immensely, you know, doing the notice of removal and all that kind of thing, and show how each step by step how it goes in general.
Okay. Right. Well, maybe, you know, we're kind of running out of time, and we do have people here, and we just got to the Q&A, and that'll eat up all the time and still won't have enough time. So maybe we could do that at the beginning of next Monday's program. Maybe you could jump into the queue quickly and give us a reminder, and we'll go through that. But get us early in the program. You know,
okay.
I put a lot of time in covering a lot of stuff, and we didn't get started with other things till much, much later. Brent didn't get on to that. Goodness, I think it was late. So.
Okay, well, speaking of Brent, I was wondering if you might, if Brent could talk more about how it's part of our history that we didn't allow, or that we gave preference to immigration for those who were Anglo-Saxon or of similar mind as, you know, Christian. I was wondering if Brent could talk about that. That's my question for Brent. And I appreciate your time, and thank you.
All right, thanks, Eric. Go ahead, Brent.
Well, this is fact of history, what I'm about to say, and people may not like it. They may disagree with it. They may not disagree with it, but the facts are the facts, and it worked well for a long time. Until from the inception of our country until the administration of John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson was expanded. The policy before that time was that people from Northern Europe would have preference as immigrants, and the quota from other places was small by comparison to people from Northern Europe. And the reason for that was, and it was written down, the policy behind it was that those folk would have an understanding of freedom that was more like ours, and if we let them in, that it wouldn't destroy our country. Recently I had a fellow call me from, well, I'd known him for a while, but he's out in Montana. They're having a terrible time out there because there's a treaty. And this is has something to do with immigration, but not directly, because the red man in America lives here, and he is a citizen of the United States, and he wants to be. Amazingly, the red man in America was treated like the Romans treated the Celts in Britain when they got there 55 years before the birth of Jesus Christ. Julius Caesar invaded Britain, and the Romans stayed for pretty near 500 years. And during that time, they told the Celtic people, that means the Cornish, the Welsh, the Scots, the Picts, all those folk, they said, you can either go live on these reservations we've set up for you, or you come out and become Roman citizens. It's up to you. Well, that's kind of the way we've done the red man here in America. But out in Montana, this fella was dealing with a problem that fell under what they call the Hellgate Treaty. The Hellgate Treaty, and the policy of the Hellgate Treaty, as all treaties with the American red man, always had clauses in it about assimilation of the red man into America. In other words, he was to be, under the terms of the federal treaty, he was to have the opportunity to be a part of the white man's world. And whatever he wanted to do, he wasn't rejected. You want to go stay by yourself, that's fine too. Live on the reservation, we'll try to set apart a place for you. Well, the idea with immigration is the same, and the policy is the same, and always has been the same, and if this policy isn't to some degree adhered to, the country will cease to exist. And the policy is this: when we have immigrants come in, they conform to us. We do not conform to them. For if we have to conform to them, then our country will cease to exist. I just got an email, and that's what the Hellgate Treaty was about, and all the treaties with all the Red Man tribes, and that's what the policy of immigration has been until, it was that until the administrations of Kennedy, which really wound up being the administration of Johnson. Kennedy never did anything. He had the intellectual words to talk because he'd been to Harvard, and he might have had some right ideas, and they might have killed him because he was trying to print greenbacks. That's all true. But Johnson really tried to do stuff, and he did some terrible damage. He went ahead and followed those policies out, and they've magnified ever since. And one of them is, and it reached the full-blown madness under Obama. And his policy, he hates white people, and he hates Christianity. And I don't blame him in some ways. We all have plenty of things to be hated for, but that doesn't mean you have license to destroy the country. And what he wanted to do, you go read what he said. He wanted people who were not white to come to America. He didn't care where they came from. He was going to find every angle to get them in, and he did, along with his buddies. Really, he was just a useful idiot of more powerful men than himself, like George Soros. And the idea was to bring people in that have a different religious point of view. Because if you bring people in that have a different religious point of view, it will destroy your country. People can whine and cry about that and say that's not true in America. That's all nice. That's just theory. It doesn't work that way. Because you cannot separate, it's impossible to separate religion, law, and government. You can distinguish the three for purposes of analysis, but all government rests upon law. And all law comes from a source, anciently and even yet today, called a lawgiver. The other word that we use in our speech is God. A God is a lawgiver, a final arbiter of right and wrong, from whose decision there is no meaningful appeal. So all religion is a man or a woman's response back to the lawgiver, whatever your lawgiver is. Maybe yourself. Most, a lot of people say, well, I make up my own mind. Well, then you're on your own lawgiver. You're your own God. And I don't want to get too close to you. If that's the only standard you've got in life, you're going to be nothing but a selfish, dangerous animal. Give you enough time. But it is inevitable, and we have the First Amendment, yes, and we've perverted that. But you cannot. It is impossible. It's not a live option. I just reading recently, where I'm from my neck of the woods, there was a group of people went down to Texas back in the 1840s, and he was a preacher, and he had a family, brothers and nephews and nieces, and they all migrated from Kentucky and came here, and then they ended up going to Texas. Well, the Mexicans were in charge. Well, it was in the 1830s. The Mexicans were in charge at that time. They said there will be no Protestant churches in Texas. Protestant churches, they said, the law said, it's against the law to organize a Protestant church in Texas. And so these fellows said, their names were Parker, the Parker family. They said, well, what we'll do is we'll organize the church here, and then we'll take it down there. And that's what they did, like 20,000 other Americans. But see, the Mexicans weren't stupid. They knew that if they allowed Protestantism into their country, it would destroy their country. It would destroy their way of life. They were Roman Catholic, and they weren't going to allow that. And so they went down there with their church, and eventually the Comanches massacred them all, killed everybody, took some of the people hostage, some of the girls, and killed the men and women. But the idea was, and the point I'm making is, even the Mexicans understand that. They understand that in Korea. They understand in Japan. Whatever their religion is, and we in America abandoned the idea. I'm old enough now to say, cut the baloney. Let's talk about reality. You want to be above everybody else and say that you would respect all religions, but you don't subscribe to any. Well, then you're just a bumbling idiot. That means you've got your religion. You've gone about to establish your own rules, and I don't want to have anything to do with them, if that's what it is. And as Tom Jefferson said, along with James Madison, there is no religion among men, they said, that furthers the ideas and the ideals of liberty than Christianity. As long as, they said, and Jefferson was famous for saying this, as long as it doesn't take on the polluting robes of priesthood. Because wherever priesthood comes into the religion of Christianity, it aligns itself with the power of government. That's right. That's what priesthood is. Priesthood is an elitism that aligns itself with the power of government. But it is true that you can't separate those three, and we can distinguish them, but we can't separate them. And immigration, the policies of immigration can be abused to destroy our country, and they are. There's no question. As they have now, as you can see, destroyed Germany. I don't know if she'll ever come back. 30% of the people there are Islamic. And the same thing is happening in England to a lesser degree, and here to an even lesser degree, but it's here. Back to you, John.
Hey, thank you, Brent. All right, let's go to our next caller, Ted from California. I think it is. Hang on a minute. You click that button. It looks like, yeah, Ted from California. Go right ahead, Ted.
Hi. For 3 years now, well, first off, I'd like to say this is my first time calling in, and I'm talking about my specific situation. All night tonight we've been talking about larger issues that I really appreciate. The Bundy case especially, although my case is me, an individual, and it all started over my home of 35 years, it's coming down to the same situation where the district attorney is refusing to certify the charges, refusing to provide discovery. So again, this started I'm in criminal court in Santa Clara County.
Now, what does criminal court mean? Is that a town court? Is it a county court?
Well, it's the county court. I've been charged with a
felony.
Okay,
well, criminal, you know, the United States Supreme Court has ruled that the criminal court is a nisi prius court. And, you know, they're violating your right of due process to begin with. That's every single time they're violating your due process when they don't give you the common law and your opportunity to defend yourself. They take it all away from you in these courts. So the only hope you have, okay, to deal with these people is to challenge them in the federal courts. You become the plaintiff, take them into the federal court, and have them show by what authority. Now, if they're taking your home, are they trying to take it for taxes, or is this a mortgage company? Well, who's
going
to take you home?
They took it. They've now taken it.
Who? The from the town? The taxes?
The bank. No, the bank.
The bank. Okay. Well, they had no right or no authority to take your home. Now, so you're out of your home now?
I was taken out by the SWAT team.
Okay. Well, again,
you have huge
damages. I mean, when they took you out by the SWAT
team. You bet I do. Let me explain to you. I was fighting and winning against the foreclosure. The individual that bought the house at foreclosure sale is at every foreclosure sale. He's Chinese, and I believe there's a little network going on here.
Absolutely
now,
is.
What happened next was all of a sudden this judge that had nothing to do with my case. Now, there's two cases going on at this point. There's the eviction, what they call, you know, unlawful detainer. They got a judgment there, but I got it on appeal. I got a stay in place. And then they turned around and they started a quiet title lawsuit against me, the guy that got the house at foreclosure sale. Why? Because some people in Los Angeles filed a couple of papers on my title. I've now found out. One was a substitution of trustee. The other was a rescission of sale. They subsequently once the property was back in my name, I had good record title according to the county recorder's office. I was told by these people to record a quit claim deed to take the home from my name to my trust. I am being charged with recording a quit claim deed, PC-115. And
I don't know much about quit claim deeds. I don't know how that process works. I'd have to look into it. But, you know, what we do often is we make things too complex, okay? And I understand the details of your case is important and that you think you need to defend those in court and to win the case, but that's not true.
I'm giving you the background because what's now going on is a major conspiracy where the district attorney is coming after me, making false charges against me, and because I sued this one judge in federal court. That's why all of this is going on.
Was this a state judge or a federal judge or a county
state, judge? State judge.
Okay, so you sued him in federal court. Well, look at and did you win?
No, they got the case dismissed.
Yeah, well, that's the normal way. Again,
you have to remember how that happened.
Did you go in with a lawyer or did you do this yourself?
I'm doing it myself.
But when you went into the federal court, did you do it with a lawyer?
I did it myself.
Okay, all right. Because if you did it with a lawyer, you definitely there's no brainer on what was being thrown out because they're gonna threaten that lawyer. They need to protect the status quo in this situation. But the only way you can get to them, and again, you have to also have people behind you. You know, that's a key thing, to have people come into the courtroom. I don't know if you've had people come into the courtroom, but you need people coming in the courtroom and write affidavits and support you. That is very helpful. We see the judge's demeanor and everything changes when they see the courtroom fills up with people, you know. And, I notice sometimes I go into a courtroom and I'm not a lawyer and I don't look like a lawyer and I don't want to look like a lawyer. I'm one of the people. I just go in. And I always often see the judge's eyes kind of looking at me a little bit here or there, wondering who I am. You know, we went to court recently down here on a case in the Supreme Court, New York State Supreme Court in Dutchess County. And when we went in there, Gerard and I went down there. And, there was only a couple of people and they were doing a few cases, but I constantly kept seeing the judge looking at us. He was wondering, who are we? What are we doing there? And of course, he found out. So they're kind of wondering that. And you got to be careful, though, because, you know, you have to intimidate them. You can't let them intimidate you. So you have to know how to set the court up. And not that this is going to work all the time, but I think it has a good chance of working most of the time. If you really, really lay things out. You know, this is a court of record. You got to use memorandums to make your points of law and don't let your points of law confuse your case. You make a statement in your action and a conclusion, you know, the statement and a point, and then you go to a memorandum to prove that point so you don't really fill your action up with a lot of stuff. They love to fill the court up with a lot of crap. I mean, I just got papers on one of the cases that I'm doing, and goodness, it must have been, no exaggeration, 2 inches of rulings from federal courts, which a pile or amount to nothing. It's nothing. It means nothing. Not one of those cases have anything to do with this case, nor may it have. They try to confuse the court, fill it up with a lot of junk, even cases that don't even have anything to do with your case, and make certain statements, and the judge isn't going to go look it up, and if you don't debate it or let it be known to put an opposition to it, it's going to sit some. The bottom line to any of these things anyway is they seem to think common law is a collection of federal court decisions in the sense of the federal court. Same thing in the state courts. It's a collection of state court decisions. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's not common law. It has nothing to do with my case. And that's the point you got to get to, and you have to have that kind of a position that the other side will use to be removed from the case. And the judge has got to understand it, and you got to make him understand it, that his hind is in the sling here, that he is susceptible to being damaged in this case if he's going to rule the wrong way. And that's a very difficult thing to do, because you've got to do this without intimidating him. Well, you want to intimidate him. You got to do this without embarrassing him. You got to do this without actually saying it up front to him. You got to kind of hide it in the case. And these guys in the federal courts especially, they're not stupid. They're pretty bright. So they'll pick this up if they read the case. And I think most of them do read the cases. That's the difference, at least in the state of New York. In New York State, these judges don't seem to read the cases at all. But in any event, you got to set your case up in the right way so that you're going to get a court of law, you know, a court of record. And if you don't do that up front and make that your first battle and get past all of the BS that's going to try to take that out, and once you've settled that, now you can really win your case, because the judge has no place to hang his hat. So, again, I don't know how you positioned yourself in court, how you made your battle, I go in and I want them to understand this is an Article III court, and I want them to understand what I'm talking about. And they know, federal judges know anyway. I want them to understand what I'm talking about, and as soon as anything that rises its ugly head that's against that kind of that conclusion, you got to go at it with an axe. Not literally, but figuratively, literally. You need to axe that out. You need to go at it and kill it. And that's the only way you're going to get your case through. You have to position and get the law up front. Now, you've got a really good case. You just have to argue it right. I think you got a case that, I don't know how you could win it now. I mean, I'm not sure where you're at now with this and how you would approach
where
it.
I'd
have to know more, but we don't have the time to get into that now because we just passed our time. But, the only hope I can give you is I think there are going to be major changes in this country in the next month or two or so. Huge, huge changes. Something's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. The big question is the people going to step up and take control? Are they going to take the position of consenters? And if they do, then you will have a very good chance. Well, it's probably a slam dunk for you to get your restitution that you would deserve off of this. They've damaged you in so many ways, and in fear and stress, and I mean all kinds of things. I
had a heart attack
for a while.
I had a heart attack over it.
Yeah, well, there you go. All of this stuff, man, this is huge. You can get restitution as soon as we can get courts of justice again. So that's the only key. You know, you could try building a battle now and going in, and I don't want to, try to deter you from doing that. But it might be wise to continue to prepare your case and get all your ducks in a row, get a little more educated. Meanwhile, working with us as we the people to get justice back in the courts, and then you'll have your case prepared to take into the courts almost immediately. You can go to a grand jury and get a case going there. And you know what? What people do is when they go and if they've been injured and the grand jury, goes after someone for an injury, the people need to make it clear and become part of that case. And a true court of law really will make the people a part of that case, because they have to restore the injured party. That's what it's all about. And the injured party never gets restored. And it's not all about jail time. It's about restoring. And that's what you got to get. And that's what you need to make sure that any court of law that goes forward, that you are part of this court of law, even if you have to, represent yourself inside here to make sure that restitution is there. The jury needs to understand that they're there to restore you, okay? If they find the individuals guilty, and I'm sure they would in your case, to restore you. Not to just find them guilty, put them in jail and give the government money and fines and everything, and you're just thrown out into the street, and there you are. And that's what we're trying to do with the administrations, by building the jury administrations for people in every county to take control of this in the court system. That's how we can bring it back. When we teach the jury their authority and their powers, that they got the ultimate powers, they can nullify anything, and we don't allow them to get lost in whatever kind of BS that the prosecutor might try to feed them. They have to get past that, and they have to be looking for restoring, and they can't allow the judge to make any decisions on law. That's their business. not his business. He is just the orchestrator. He's there as a traffic cop. And he takes the position or wears the hat of a magistrate. If he's a judge, he's a magistrate of that court. And because all judges are magistrates. And so, I don't know how to tell you to go forward with that. But again, I would prepare my case, spend the time, and hopefully things are going to change soon and you'll be able to move in and get justice.
I'd like to see your writ of habeas corpus. I did one, and it's currently sitting at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Here's the problem with habeas corpus. Okay, here's the problem. You file a habeas corpus, and you know it's set up in a way that you're looking for the judge to get the permission from the judge. And then the judge has to sign that to make it to allow it to go forward. Okay, and that rarely, if ever, happens. Okay, we set our habeas corpus up to come to the grand jury, which is the protector of the people. Okay, and so the grand jury, approves the habeas corpus and sends it forward. As a matter of fact, we use the administration for the jury, the grand jury, that makes the approval and sends it to the judge and the prosecutor and all the people involved, show cause. Produce the body, show cause, and because these people have not gotten the due process, and release them if nobody can come up with anything that could truly hold them there. And usually it's nothing, But, they're not paying attention to that either. If you want, we're hoping to get into the doing habeas corpuses again. We just need more people involved on the writing end side of things in order to go forward with that. But, talk with Jan about that and fill out the paperwork, and we'll see about helping you in the near future with a habeas corpus.
Okay. My next hearing is on the 16th. And one of the reasons...
January?
Correct.
Go ahead.
Well, that's to hear my motion to dismiss... For failure to state a claim, for failure to certify the charges, for failure to provide discovery. All my papers are already in. I just want people to come to the hearing. Like you said, when the court fills up with...
Notify. We have a court action group, a committee, and they will respond. Go out and find the person on that committee. Go to our directory and find the committee chairman for that and give them a call. I forget her name. Who is it, Jan, that's running that? Do you remember? Maybe Jan left because it's after 12. I don't know. Anyway, go out there. You'll find the chairperson for that and then give them a call and get the information out, and you should do it now. Because people need time to respond to this, and maybe you can get a couple of people out to you. We've got quite a few. You're in California, you said, right? What county?
Yes, Santa Clara County.
I think we've got quite a few people out in that area, I think. So you might be able to, get a few people to come out with you. You do need support. That's important.
Okay.
You don't ever want to go to court by yourself, ever.
I couldn't figure out on your website. I put up the information, but I couldn't find where somebody that told me about your website said there was a place to put your information of when your next hearing was. I called the number for the California person, and that's disconnected. So I'm not able to reach anybody out here.
Well, if you go to our website, Highlight Committee, come down to Courtroom Observers Committees, and then you'll find, the protocol, call to action, go through there's 1, 2, 3, 4. They got 5 pages underneath the Courtroom Observers Committee. Go through all of them and see what you can find. I'm sure you'll find a story there. And also you should be able to find the committee chairman. If you can't find the committee chairman, you can call, go to our directory. You should be able to find him there. And if necessary, you can call Jan. His number's in one of the first couple of paragraphs here. He's the national coordinator, and he will be able to direct you to the proper person. But I see right here on the directory, Courtroom Observers is Terry. Terry's very active, and she's on the call I don't know if she's still on the call right now, but you can call her tomorrow, 972.
Okay. Also, they have been talking about dismissing the charges. And, you know, they did this by information. I have not, there is no indictment. And I've thought about taking this into federal court, doing a 12B6 motion to dismiss, and they're past the time to indict anyway. This has been going on for more than 3 years.
Well, an information, you shouldn't even be in court with an information. An information should be going to the, if the prosecutor is writing an information, he needs to get that to the grand jury to make the decision. The problem, of course, there is the fact that, you know, he can get his ham sandwich, and as Brent was talking about a little earlier. So that is a problem. But look at, yeah, they don't seem to have anything here.
Well, there's no crime here. There's no crime.
Well, I see that. But again, get some people to go with you. Call the Observer. We're 11 minutes over, so we're going to close off. And if you want, we could talk again next week. I know you have your case. Your case is coming up the 16th?
Yes.
Did you say? Okay. And today is the 8th, so we're looking at next Tuesday.
And I have a trial date February 5th.
Okay, but look, at you need to get out to the courtroom observers now. You need to give people time to react to this. Because all too often people wait till the last minute and then nobody shows up. But people need to get the word out early. Okay?
Look, let me tell you one last thing. I was in the courtroom, ordered in against doctor's orders. I started having a second heart attack. The judge came out of her chambers, went back on the bench, and continued to prosecute me. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they are evil. There's no doubt about it.
They're monsters.
Yes, they are. I would continue to gather your case together, get all your evidence together, and hopefully soon we're going to be making our move. And again, it's up to the people to do this. You know, people got to move, and you know, they can't say the other person's going to do it. You got to do it. Anybody hearing my voice, you have to do it. Do not think the other guy is doing it. You got to do it. And that's the only way the people are going to step up. Let's get up there and do it.
I agree with you. And after I finish getting this dismissed, I want to continue to be part of your group. I've got a ton of experience now. I've been in all these different courts. Mm-hmm. And I need to start my education through your website on the parts that – what's on your website are the parts that I don't know and are missing, okay? Right. But I do have some help, and I do have a guy that's been pounding on the fact that they haven't certified the charges. This is by information. They have no signed complaint from anybody.
Right. Yeah, there must be a sworn affidavit in order to get a warrant out for you. So someone has to swear something against you, okay? And, you know,
there is
Well, that's the point. They don't have that. You need to understand that and make that point in court if you have to, okay?
That's what I'm going to be doing on the 16th. And
there must be an accuser, and they must swear to it. And very rarely will anyone in government do that, and it's hard for them to get someone to do that. So usually that could fall apart. But if people are ignorant to that, they're going to go after you without it. They don't care because they're evil.
Well, no,
you know,
I put it
in getting better,
paper.
Though, I think. Things are going to get better, and you know, because the word is getting out, and I think it's getting out to the judiciary now that, you know, they're being gunned out after, so to speak, by the people who are coming in for justice, and they're going to be a lot of indictments, I think, on judges, and that's going to be it, you know? So that's what.
Well, they stole my house. They had a 10-minute trial for quiet title on my house without noticing me of the trial, and the papers that were submitted were not sufficient for a finding in the guy's favor. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well,
I have it on. You
like
got to understand.
I believe they're being targeted right now. Many people in the judiciary is being targeted right now by the president and by Jeff Sessions. They're going after these people. And again, you know, I think that word is starting to get through the system. at least on the federal level, and it'll go down into the state level too. But you know, justice is coming. I believe that's why they threw the case out there against the Bundys. Not only did they have a problem with the jury and they couldn't control it, and I'm sure they would love to have gone back into court again, because that's what they usually do, but they didn't. And why didn't they? I think that they know that their rear ends are in a sling now, and they're a target. They are not, and they're a target from us too. We are intending on bringing this up to the grand jury for an indictment, and I believe we're going to get it, and then they'll be filed, and you know, look it, they're on the run, and rightly so.
Okay.
These are all evil people that have taken positions of power, and we got to get.
They're psychopaths.
Yes,
they have no.
Yes,
and people need to understand that that is not a derogatory.
No, they have no empathy. They are psychopaths. I agree with you. They don't care about anyone but themselves.
You are very, very smart. No, a lot of people don't even know what a psychopath. You say psychopath or sociopath, mm-hmm. and they think that you're calling them a bad name. They don't understand, and you hit it right away. They have no empathy.
No, they don't.
This judge came on the bench while I'm having a heart attack. The paramedics are on the way, already been called, and she continued to prosecute me. She continued to ask me questions. She continued to try to set court dates.
Yeah, they're sick.
And remember,
they need to go where they belong. They need a nice, quiet place for a long time.
Oh yeah, they do.
And we'll give them the places that they built for us. We'll give it to them. So. Anyway, that's going to be up to the trial jury to make those decisions, and I'm sure they will make the right decisions too, because the people have had it. The people have had it. You know, some people do belong in jail. The violent people belong in jail. The people who have really injured and hurt people and just don't care and keep going on and on and on, they've made a career of that. So there's no doubt. They could never pay restitution to all the damage that they've done. But whatever they own needs to be taken away from them by a jury, given to whatever victims are out there, and they need to be sent away for a long time. But again, like I said, that's going to be the jury's decision. I wish I could be the prosecutor on all these cases. But
they've destroyed my life. They've taken my health. I'm a young person, okay? I got the home when I was 18 years old. I had it for 35 years. I'm in the street. I have no money. I have nothing.
Yeah.
I'm still fighting. I will not let them get away with this.
Right now you're going to want to get out of the situation that you're in. You want to continue
Correct.
To put your ducks in a row, get collect your evidence, write your affidavits, keep a good record, get all your evidence together, get an education, and work to get the processes of law back in place into the courts, and then you'll be able to take your case in. And win, and I'm confident that you'd win.
Do you
but
know they
that,
offer?
We gotta go. It's way over, and there was a lot of people, but we gotta go. It's 20 after midnight right now here in the East Coast. Okay, so hopefully we'll see you next week, and make that call to the chairman for the
Okay.
Observers Group. Okay, right under the directory, you'll find them.
They put it in writing, offered me a deal that if I would drop the civil lawsuit for my house, that they would lower the charges to a misdemeanor.
Yeah, they do that kind of stuff all the time. And that's good.
That's
make sure
extortion.
You make a record of that. And whatever proof you can get, write an affidavit on that. If anybody was in the courtroom and heard all that, you want to get an affidavit from them, because that's a crime.
They put it in writing.
Oh, well, there you go. Keep it. Write it in your affidavit and refer to it. Yes. All right, I got to go. All right, Ted?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, with that, we're going to end our call for the evening. I'm sorry for those we didn't get to. Hopefully, you'll get in early next week. We'll be back next Monday, Lord willing. And, again, everybody needs to get busy. Let's take a look at these cases that we're considering indictments for. And whatever you can do to help donations, $5 a month is not a big deal, and anybody who can afford more, we'd appreciate that. Okay, good night, everybody. Thanks.